time for In and Around the House with Tony Wirtz and Ernie Brown. Got a question? Call us at 749-B105. Now, let's join Tony Wirtz and Ernie Brown for In and Around the House.
Good morning. Welcome to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. And it's hot, hot, hot. As a matter of fact, I even wore shorts today. So it's shorts and long sleeves right now for the morning, and then I'll change over a little bit later. It's going to be beautiful in comparison to what we've been seeing, temperature-wise especially. And Ernie is out this morning again. You know, I don't know about that guy. But in lieu of Ernie, we have Bob from Barge Nursery. He's co-hosting with me again this morning. And good morning, Bob. How are you?
I'm doing great. Good morning, Tony. How you been?
I'm doing well. I'm tired. Couldn't stay up and watch any basketball last night.
I tried. I got to about halftime and then forget it. I just couldn't finish. I wish I could have. It looked like there were some great finishes to the end of the tournament yesterday. So those games must have been pretty good.
I think so. Forget about it. I knew this before I went to bed last night. Now I turned it in a little early, just there right before 9 o'clock, and I'm thinking to myself, oh, you need to watch this. You need to watch this. And then I'm thinking, nope. You'll get really aggravated and angry and be mad at yourself tomorrow if they lose.
Right. But so they didn't.
They didn't.
And they played well. Kentucky played well. You got the X-Men playing tonight.
Oh, big time.
You know, what a great game. They came back. And it was funny that I couldn't stay up late and finish watching their game either. So I went to bed.
Right.
And this is the only time where my dogs got me up in the, you know, midnight or whatever time it was. And I'm like, oh, come on. I got to get up with the dogs again. So I get up and I'm like, well, maybe X is still on. I flip it on and it's about 2 minutes and 9 seconds left and they were down by 8. And I got to watch the best part of the game, and I was
right
like,
back.
This is fantastic. So I wasn't mad at my dogs that night.
That's all you have to do. So just set your alarm for that last few minutes.
Hey.
There, that's where it happens.
Yeah, and I didn't get to see the end of the Kentucky game. I really wish I would have. There was some incredible talent, obviously NBA talent, on that floor, and Kentucky's going to lose probably 3-4 guys at least to the NBA. Alonzo Ball said he's going to the NBA. So, I mean, there's a lot of talent in that first half. It was fun to watch.
Yeah. It's that time of year, and everybody's, I don't know how the brackets are faring up for most people. Yourself?
Busted.
You're busted?
I'm completely busted. Everything is shot. Yeah. So
I didn't get into any brackets.
Well, you're probably good that you did. It's probably good you didn't. So
I don't lose.
But you know what?
Can't
win,
but I don't lose.
I love basketball, but I'll tell you what, today is going to be a great day.
That
75
is.
Degrees. I think it's supposed to be some sun. And then clouds are going to come in and we're going to get some rain. But, you know, we had that warm spell in February and everybody was like, spring, spring, spring.
Right.
I remember sitting with you and talking about, okay, the cold's coming. Well, it sure did. And, you know, we'll talk about more of that as we get in through the show here.
Big time.
But, you know, today's going to be that really first spring Saturday where I think people start to say, hey, it's finally starting to wake up in Cincinnati.
They better get antsy, get out to your local garden centers and nurseries, pick up the Fertilum three-step program, pick up the turf and ornamental with Dimension. Yes. Get some of those things done early today. Take advantage of the moisture that we're going to get later on and tomorrow as well. And just get it all done so you can tune into some basketball later on.
Well, and you say, if you say, well, I'll just get it next weekend. The problem is the weeds are already started. I mean, the weeds started because we got warm in February.
Mm-hmm.
The early weeds got started. And man, I don't know about your yard, but your yard's always perfect.
Mine's
a little bit of a mess right now. And, you know, I did get my pre-emergent down before the Home and Garden Show, which was crazy and really early, but I knew for the next 3 weeks I had no time.
Right.
And boy, am I glad I did because the early weeds, wow, I can't believe how much they've started.
You know what? I was cleaning up a little bit yesterday and what I did, we've been so busy at the garden center, like yourself. You know what that's all about. You never really get to your own yard until late.
Never.
And people come into the garden center. I bet your yard looks so nice. Well, I'm here to tell you, I'm like the painter whose house needs to be painted or the plumber that has a leaky faucet. Furthest from the truth, I really don't get into the yard until, you know, after we turn into June,
yeah.
You know, and then I'm trying to play a little catch up. But I had a little bitter cress in a couple of my beds.
Already. I did too, especially along the edges, along the driveways, and some areas where my pre-emergent, I may have obviously missed. It still came up.
Yeah, it, you know, you can put a little bit of that on your salad if you like. It's edible.
No, thank you. No,
but,
I know it's edible.
Once that sets up, now bittercress is one of those winter annual weeds that germinates late in the fall, usually in the fall season, you know, just like henbit, just like, you know, the dead nettle. These are the guys that creeps into the lawn or your landscape beds late in the season. And that's why we try to put a lot of emphasis on, you still need another application late summer before you go into the fall season with some sort of a pre-emergent.
Well, and we always talk about that. And there are times where, you know, you've got to put it down. And if you put it down too late, it's kind of like the three-step. We want to get that first step down. And if you can do it today, that's great, because we're getting to that point.
And the rain's coming.
Yes.
So what more do you want?
Right. And prodiamine does work into, what is it, stage one or stage two of the crabgrass. It works a little bit later in to help prevent.
Probably, you mean after it has germinated?
Yeah, after it started.
Probably. You know, I don't know what that element is. It would have to be, I would have to say it's earliest stages.
Yeah.
I do know this, that Dimension has that post effectiveness in that early stage.
Right. And so you're okay if you put that down a little bit late, but there's no reason to. You know, get out there. It's going to be 70 degrees, 75 degrees today. You got to get out and do it. It's going to be going to be great today.
Make yourself do it, because yesterday I finally got to the ornamental grasses.
Did you?
And I just made myself do it. You know, I went to work yesterday morning. Then all of a sudden, I start getting busy. You start getting caught up.
Yep.
And I'm like, you know what? Nope. Got in a van, went home, taped everything up with that good old
Kentucky
chrome. Got it
all cleaned up, huh?
Yes. I felt vindicated last night. And then I even went as far as to, I got my first mowing in.
Oh, it had to smell great.
It did. And Tina came outside. She was cooking, and she walked out into the garage, and she said, it smells so good out here.
Yeah. The first cut, you know, we were talking about it before in the past. You know, we've talked about some of those great first smells. The first cut of spring, and I haven't done mine. Mine's tomorrow. I hope it doesn't rain too bad, but it's supposed to. I need to get a cut in. I have to. It's getting high. I'm probably going to bag
it. You better cut it this morning, today.
That's not going to happen. So I'm going to go help everybody else on Saturday. So, you know, it's the painter's house needs to be painted. Well,
I hear you. You know. No, I've been there. I've done that. But yesterday, And I say this all the time, I hope everyone who has power equipment, and you typically have it serviced annually, that you have it back, it's working properly, because yesterday, even my neighbor across the street walked over and he commented on my Steel weed eater. You know, I put the round blade on it, that sharp blade for cutting ornamental grasses.
Oh, did you?
That does the job, like right now.
It expedites it
big time. He's like, man, that really sounds good. And I was like petting it just a little bit. And I said, it's purring like a kitten.
Yeah, just taking care of it. And it's not a new one, is it? You've had it a few years, haven't you? A couple years?
It's probably 5 or 6 years old.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
And John and Jim down at Bud Herbert Motors and their staff, their crew, do an excellent job for me. And Ernie as well.
Now, when did you take yours in? Because we always talked about in the fall having your serviced in the off season. So you've got it ready in the spring.
It's funny you say that. I took it in right there before I went to Vegas. I think it was
so that's February.
End of January going into February.
Yeah.
But they had it for a while. I didn't get back right away to pick it up. And I know that they were like, oh, I wish he'd come and get that. I wish he'd come in and get that.
Well, you were gone.
I was gone.
Yeah, you
not all that duration.
And what goes on in Vegas stays in Vegas.
There's some other stuff that comes back with you.
That's right.
That's in the movie Hangover. I think it was in that movie Hangover. But we got a great show lined up for you this morning. We're going to talk a lot about the Fertiloom three-step program. Plus, no pun intended, we added another little added element to this three-step program called the three-step Fertiloom program plus. We'll tell you a little bit more about that, too, when we come out of the break. Tony Wirtz with Ernie Brown, your local home and gardening guys, and hang out with us this morning, because we got a lot of stuff to dig into, and we'll be right back. Good morning, and welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. And again, Bob Bard is here co-hosting with me this morning. Thanks, Bob, by the way, and Ernie's absence. Also, if anything's bugging you in the landscape, or if you have any questions about some things you might have in mind that you'd like to do this upcoming spring season, feel free to give us a call at 749-B105. You can also email us at inandaroundthehouse@b105.com. And also, take it upon yourself, if you'd like to get out on the internet, Facebook us. We're out there on Facebook. You can post some photos out there if you like. And if you want to go back and catch a past show, you can certainly do that by going to our internet webpage and checking out the podcast. So a lot of things that you can do to stay connected with us at here at In and Around the House. And we were talking about the three-step Fertilume Lawn Program. Today's going to be a great day to get out and do that. And try and get all that kind of pulled together and done a little early this morning, mid-afternoon. Then pop a bottle cap or whatever later on and watch some basketball around the 6 o'clock hour. Right, Bob?
X-Men are on it.
X-Men or 609.
So let's go X. I love to see all the local teams. I wish all of them were playing well. You know, obviously we have our fans. I know you're a UK fan. I'm a UC fan. I'm an X fan, too. I love what they're doing and what Coach Mack's doing. I mean, he's done an amazing job. Those kids are playing hard. I mean, those kids are playing hard. Nobody expected an 11 seed to do what they're doing. And, man, are they playing
good. They're peaking, that's for sure.
And UK, I watched the first half. I mean, I said a long time ago, I thought they were going to win the whole thing. I thought they had the talent to win the whole thing. I told my dad, I don't know if we have a bet going on, but preseason, I watched them play a little bit. I said, that's the most talented team out there right now. So,
a lot of talent, that's for sure. More than I have. More than I had when I played ball at Holmes High School. But
back in the day.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
But, hey, the lawn right now. We've been talking a little bit about the lawn already this morning. And we're talking about, we're throwing another little spin on this, the three-step Fertilume program. You know, using the All Seasons 2 as your pre-emergent, your first application that goes down in the month of March through the middle, pushing it towards the latter part of April. But that's the ideal window of opportunity to get that pre-emergent down and keep crabgrass out and other unwanted pesky weeds as well. But along this whole program, we talk about, you know, some of the things that we're seeing now in the landscape, some of the beds, maybe even the turf as well, in various areas of the lawn, our winter annual weeds. And that element that we say the three-step program plus is throwing in the weed-free zone to get rid of anything that's already existing.
And the weed-free zone is a post-emergent weed killer, and it's sprayed directly on the weeds. And it to really take advantage of especially these early winter weeds that are growing and already starting to seed, we're going to try to kill them before the seeds really pop and start to spread all over the lawn.
Now, I'm all for that. I agree with that approach. Now, a lot of times you'll see where universities will say, you know what, they're going to die out anyway.
Right.
But I want to get them before they set up and they're able to disperse seed. Bittercress, that stuff just pops out, flies out. And, you know, if you have a lot of deer activity in your lawn or your yard and you have bittercress.
And we've had a lot of wind. I mean, it could be a lot of deer, wind, too, wind, kids playing. Anything, and if you've ever had it, you know, you have the little seed pods and you walk through it, all of a sudden you can see them pop when you walk through it. And there's hundreds and hundreds of seeds just blowing directly into the lawn, and a lot of them don't reach surface contact. So, you know, if you've got a thick lawn, you prevent those weeds,
right.
Which still the best way to prevent weeds is a thick lawn.
Right.
But sometimes you got bare spots, and bare spots create great opportunity for weeds to grow.
That's where they like to hang out. It's like the insects on the underneath side of the leaf. Well, weeds like those areas that there's very little turf in because there isn't any competition.
Right. And it's easy for them to grow.
They can set up shop and they're there.
So, you know, we're talking about this three-step plus, and that weed-free zone is a great product. But one thing I did want to also remind everybody, the first step of the three-step program, those bags are only 5,000 square feet bags, as opposed to in your fall, you get the 10,000 square foot bags. So, you know, just remind everybody on that first step, you know, when they buy the red bag, because that's what they're looking for. You know, people come in and ask for the red bag.
It only comes in fives.
It only is in 5,000 square foot. So if you treat 10,000 square feet, you're going to need two bags in the spring. So, but
good point.
Just a little side note. And, you know,
sometimes you're not thinking about that. And you're like, oh, wow.
Right. They come in to buy a bag and they go, well, I bought one bag last year. Well, you might have bought one 10,000 square foot bag. So this in the spring, you got to buy two. But the weed free zone is a great product.
I love that product. And, you know, versatile as well. From a homeowner standpoint, you can buy it in three various approaches.
Correct.
You can use the RTU, which is the ready to use. It's like a little trigger bottle, almost something
like a household cleaner bottle.
Yeah, like Windex. Remember, kind of like that type of a bottle.
Exactly.
So you can just spot treat things.
Mm-hmm.
You can also buy a hose end applicator.
Right.
And then you can also buy it in a concentrate form.
And all of them work well. It really is up to you. I like to buy the concentrate and mix it myself.
I agree.
I like to have a pump sprayer where you take the handles and you pressurize the tank and walk around and spot spray the weeds. Because, one, when you just treat the lawn and there's no weeds, you're just spraying chemical for no reason. So that's not really being responsible. But you are walking around your lawn directly spraying the weeds when you have a pump sprayer.
Right.
And those pump sprayers do an effective kill because you know you're getting plenty of product on the weed itself.
Now, and so we're taking this back to when you look at the hose end sprayer in comparison to using a tank sprayer. We're going to tell you a little bit about that and what you want to pay attention to. We're going to take a quick break, give Bob or myself a call here at 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. And if you're just joining us this morning, thank you. And I hope you're enjoying a good old hot cup of Java like I am. And Bob Bard's in here with us, co-hosting for Ernie in his absence.
Good morning.
And we have Rose from Norwood with us. And Rose, you have a mulch question? Good morning, Rose.
Good morning.
How have you been?
I'm just loving this weather.
I am too. I'm just like you. I'm anxious. I have shorts on today. I'm ready to go out and tackle it, as a matter of fact, with those warm temperatures.
It's beautiful. I can't get enough of it. It's been a long time coming.
Right. As my good friend Jim Montag says, do something dirty. How you
that's
like?
Right.
It's a great day to do it.
Yeah, that's what my mom and I used to say to each other, is to get down and get dirty.
Yeah. So what's going on?
Well, I'll tell you what, he answered one question I was going to ask about the Fertilome, how that's sold and how much you need. Like, I wouldn't know how much I need. But also, there's an area that I've got that is it partners next to a brick building. It's mm-hmm. about 2.5 foot deep and maybe 40 foot long, and I was wanting to put down landscaping cloth and mulch because it's just a problem area. It's really hot.
Mm-hmm.
I can't grow anything, and right. It just becomes unsightly and ugly, and you can't get in there with a lawnmower. It's just a problem child.
So you have about 100 square feet, roughly, a little less.
Okay.
And any types of mulch that you like in particular? I'm just curious, like color-wise, black? Do you like the cypress mulch? It has more of a reddish tone to it.
I think I like more of the reddish tone, and mm-hmm. I also had given some thought to the pine straw mulch.
There you go. You made my ears perk up there. I love the pine straw mulch. And for a couple of reasons, and Bob, you can chime in anytime. You know, pine straw mulch is so popular, and it allows air to get to the soil surface, oxygen to get to the plants and the root structure. So that's important in itself. And also, it doesn't get hard and crusty on top, therefore okay. allowing water to permeate, especially when we get into the hot summer months.
Right.
So there's two added values and benefits right there with pine mulch alone. So,
yeah.
And that's a little tough to gauge because, you know, you can't exactly measure that depth-wise like you can to a degree with other bag types of mulch or if you buy it bulk, however you purchase it.
Right. When the pine straw, if you're using the pine straw, you'll probably only need two bales, maybe three. You're going
right.
to get 40 to 50 square feet
exactly.
out of a bale. So it's pine
oh,
straw is
nice.
Pretty economical, and it's easy to put down.
Yeah, and you know something else, Rose? A lot of women who come into the garden center that, you know, they're not capable of lifting some of those heavier bags. That's why they like the pine straw. It's easy to work with. It's light in weight, and you're getting all those benefits with it. So I would, if you've never used it, I would encourage you to use it. I always tell people, too, when they come into the garden center, if you've never used it, find an isolated area out in your landscape. Use a couple of bales before you go all in, you know, hog wild, and see how you like it.
Yeah, I would definitely try it. Also, you had mentioned, Rose, that you were talking about putting down some weed fabric. Is that
yeah.
correct? There's different types of weed fabric out there as well. There's 3-year, 6-year, 12-year.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to go ahead and spend the time and put a weed barrier down and definitely use the fabric, I don't know if they even sell plastic anymore. I'm sure it's still out there, but don't use plastic. Use the fabric. Don't be afraid to go ahead and spend a few extra dollars and get the 12-year fabric because it's going to last a lot longer for you, and it'll really help prevent those weeds because it's a lot thicker fabric, but it's still going to allow the water to get down through the plant to the plants.
Yeah, that's what I was. That's what I had recalled on it. When I'm putting that flame stroke mulch down, how deep should I put it?
Well, that's what's funny about it. It's hard to say because it's various sizes and lengths on the pine, on the needles itself. You're just going to wear gloves and just take it and just start breaking it up. Just mix it up and start spreading it out.
It's very fluffy. It's very fluffy. So when you first put it down, it might be 5 inches thick. It's just because it's very lightweight and airy. But as soon as it rains on it two or three times, it'll kind of pack down in, probably settle into a couple inches. You just want to make sure that you're covering all your fabric. And when you look at it, just have your fabric covered. And you'll find out it does break down a little bit faster than some of the other mulches, but that's a good thing. And then so when you put it down, you break it apart, probably going to be 4 or 5 inches thick just because it's airy.
You'll get the feel of it.
Yeah, I think I will, and I think the weather's real good for it, too.
There it is, yeah. 2 to 3 bales, okay?
That sounds good.
Rose, you have a wonderful weekend. Always a pleasure to talk with you. Enjoy the weather. Go ahead.
There was one other thing I wanted to mention.
Uh-huh.
There's an app that I get. It's a neighborhood app, and someone had posted that the Civic Garden Center does a fundraiser, a sale at the beginning of May, and they accept donations.
Huh. Okay, I hadn't heard of that.
Yeah, Civic Garden Center, a great entity. As a matter of fact, Rose, are just right up the street from us.
Just right down the corner.
Yeah, and I was thinking, I think that would be a great program. I'd like to know more about that place.
It would be a good show topic, and we'll try and do our best to have somebody come in sometime.
Yeah, I think that would. I have a lot of interest in them. I know that they do a lot of work with inner city children, and they do rooftop gardens, and
they do a lot of interesting
kind of
things.
Clubs.
Definitely a lot.
All
of
that good stuff.
Yeah,
all right, Rose, we got to take a quick break here, sweetie. We don't mean to cut you short there, but again, stay in touch. Always a pleasure to talk with you, and we'll see what we can do with the folks from the Civic Garden Center. Okay. And, boy, I tell you what, she hit the nail on the head. This weather is just so conducive for
absolutely
getting things rolling for this upcoming spring season. And keep that in mind. We still got to touch base about the sprayers. And when we do,
touch up about mulch, too. There's a few things in there. So we got a lot to talk about today.
We do. We'll be right back. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. And today is just going to be an awesome day to get out and do something in the landscape, in the yard. And also, too, don't forget that the butterfly show kicks off over at the Crone Conservatory. So if you're looking to do something with the little ones, that might be a place you might want to head out to. And, Bob, real quick, we were talking a moment or two ago about the different ways to apply some of our post herbicides.
Yeah.
And we're talking about the tank sprayer versus the hose end. And sometimes I've always found that for whatever reason, and I don't mean this to sound bad, that sometimes those hose end units, you gotta pay attention to them because they're not always siphoning correctly.
Correct.
And going back to the tank sprayer, it's always an exact science and mixture that you're using.
Right. Because you're mixing it.
Right.
So when you have a tank sprayer, most of them are a gallon. They'll be anywhere from 1 to 3 gallons, even half gallons. So there's smaller ones. But typically 1 gallon is nice because then you fill it with water. You're only carrying around about 8 pounds, nothing too heavy. You can walk around and spray the lawn. And people will complain in the garden center, it takes too long. I want just something easy. It may take a little longer, but it's so much more efficient because you're walking around looking right at the weeds. Well, you are walking around, but you're pulling a hose when you have the one connected to the hose.
Right.
And then you're dragging the hose, trying to work it around. And maybe you forget to shut it off, and all of a sudden you make a big, sweep to the left.
That
and,
could happen.
And you spray your plants.
Oops.
And all of a sudden now you got chemical on the plants, and then you got to figure out how am I going to take care of that. So I like the pump sprayer. It's a little more economical because you don't have to buy that hose end sprayer. You're paying for that. But, I understand the hose and sprayer is nice and it's convenient. But if you're really going to do it and do it right, get you a pressure sprayer. Mark on it, though, weed-free zone. I don't know if you do this. I like to write what chemical I use in it.
I'll use just what you said, either herbicide, fungicide, something.
Right.
Because a lot of times, if you're using glyphosate in something, it could be Roundup or Kills-All. There's a little residual element there.
Well, even
could
if you
be.
Use the natural, where you use vinegar and water, maybe you don't rinse it all the way out. And all of a sudden, you spray you know, something else, you might kill the entire, burn the whole lawn, you know, in spots, as opposed to just killing the weed.
Right. I just think you have better control. There's a lot more versatility and flexibility using the liquid concentrate, using a tank sprayer. Everybody should have a tank sprayer.
Everybody should have a tank sprayer. I have a couple. I have one for lawn weeds. Right. I have one for weeds in my bed. And then I also have an insecticide one because I don't want to mix them all.
Exactly.
So I do it that way. The other thing is, I don't know about you, I don't like to buy the biggest bottles. I sell a lot of them, and they're there for people if you have a big space. But know how much space you need to spray. So if you're spraying 1,000 square feet, buy the smaller bottle. If you have 2 acres, you're going to want to buy the bigger bottle. So, but that way you're not wasting any chemicals. So just kind of have a little idea before you go in. If you have no idea, then you're going to have to guess. Probably start with the middle size and do it.
And don't worry about it, too. The shelf life's like 3 to 5 years on some of these products, unless they're out in a shed or a garage where they're exposed to freezing temperatures. Right. Other than that, you're good. And Rita, thank you for hanging on. What do you have going on with the tree? You there?
Yes. Hi.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm calling. First of all, I'd like to comment your Fertilum is awesome. I've been using it for 8 years. I live in a subdivision. Everyone back here has lawn service, but me. And my yard.
Well, you're the lawn service,
so
aren't you?
So much nicer. Yes.
Yeah, you're the lawn service.
Yeah, you have lawn service. You're
it's
lawn right. service.
It's you.
Yeah, you can
yes,
charge your neighbor.
It's so easy. I mean, it's so easy. But anyway, I have a little problem. Talking about the neighborhood, about 8 years ago, the builder put in. I have a smaller yard, and in between the houses on the corner of my house, in the front, they put in a Cleveland pear. From the siding to siding, there was only 14 feet from my house to the house next to me. But anyway, it was so huge there.
Mm-hmm.
It ended up being like 25 to 30 feet. But a year ago, I had a sump pump problem, and I had to get the electrical companies out to mark the yard.
Right.
So we found out that the pear tree, which was so big, was on a gas line coming into the house.
Right over top of it. Okay.
Right over the top of it.
Mm-hmm.
So we had the only option was to cut it off at the base. And I've been up to Bard's. I live close to Bard's nursery.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And I can't have it ground. The stump cannot be ground, ground out or cut out, whatever, because it's too dangerous. So basically on the corner of the house, I have a circle landscape, and I'm looking for if I can do it, is something that doesn't have a lot of roots, something that would be vertical, that would give that corner,
some definition
in the corner.
Trying to frame it up a little bit, like the pear did, but it got too big. How tall of a plant are you looking for?
How tall?
Yeah, how big would you, what is the biggest the plant could get? And when you say you want something a little smaller, I mean, 10 foot, 12 foot, 15?
I would think maybe 10 feet, or maybe even a little bit smaller. I mean,
And Rita, what type of exposure do you have in that location?
It would get the morning sun.
Ooh, Bob, you know what I'm thinking?
Exactly what you're thinking.
Because we're right on topic here. This might lead into another discussion too. Japanese maples is on our hot list today. We've yet to even get there. But what I like about that particular species is that something to choose from, and they're shallow rooted. So that might be an answer for your situation.
Absolutely. There's a lot of things that we could definitely talk about. Would you like some evergreen or flowering?
I kind of like flowering, but I just want something to look nice.
Yeah, we have a lot of options. There are dwarf lilac trees. There are hydrangea trees. You can do the Japanese maples, which we're going to get into later, and there are some really neat varieties of Japanese maples. And we could even talk about maybe just a larger shrub that gets 6 to 8 foot tall. So there's some really pretty things.
I thought about that, too. Mm-hmm. I'm not planning on planting. I mean, I have some things going on. I'm not planning on planting it till maybe mid-April.
That'll be a great time to do it. And probably we'll be at our peak stock, the amount of stock that we'll have probably about the middle of April, right heading into the couple weeks before Mother's Day. So if you want to personally come up and see me, I will walk through the garden center with you personally, and we'll find you some nice things.
That would be great. And then I could have it, and you guys could just put it in for me.
Sure, we can help with that too. So we can talk about those options. Do me one favor before you come, and I always recommend this to everybody, bring a picture. Take a little picture of that corner and just bring it in to me. And then pay attention to the sunlight and make sure it's morning sun, and say, sometimes that morning sun sneaks up on people and it actually ends up going into late afternoon because of the way the sun comes around the house.
It might be because it's in between the houses and it comes up and goes over. So I'll look and
absolutely,
and
I would love to help you.
Sun.
If you want to even call ahead of time, I'll schedule an appointment and I'll make sure I'm completely available and we'll walk through the garden center together.
That's great. And then when you come out, I'll have the lines.
That would be where always call the
call before you dig.
Yeah, call before you dig.
Yeah.
Is that an 811 number, if I'm not mistaken? Can't you dial 811 for a call before you dig?
It might be. It's on the box.
I do have the number.
I believe it's 811, but I'll verify that. But that's a must do. Yeah. You certainly don't want to sever somebody's phone line or their cable.
No.
But anyway, Rita.
Yeah, I think I have it. I could get it. Let's see. I'll tell you in 1 second.
Well, yeah, it's 811.
Yeah.
Oh, I got a 1-800.
Yeah. If you just dial 811, you're golden.
Rita, we appreciate you calling in.
Yeah.
So thank you very much, and thanks for listening.
Thank you.
And I look forward to meeting you here and seeing you here in a little bit.
Same here. Thank you.
All right, Rita. Have a good weekend. Okay, we're going to take another quick break. If you have a question for Bob or myself, give us a call here at 749-B105. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. We'll be right back. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your home and gardening guys. And it's going to be a beautiful Saturday when you get up today. Take advantage of the weather. We're going to peak out. Looks like around 75.
Yes.
And it looks as if we got a little bit of precipitation in the forecast for later on today and perhaps into tomorrow as well.
Spring is springing, right?
Spring is springing.
How about that one? Yes, yeah. It's about time. Bring it on.
It looks good. From this point forth, this is what we're hoping for, looking for. We've been busy as bees at Jackson Florist and Garden Center. We moved all of our rose bushes out.
This is why we love Cincinnati. This is
the weather.
These are the reasons because, you know, I know we complain about how it changes from 20 to 80. And we were talking about in February, it was so warm, but it's days like this. It's 75 degrees. It's going to be perfect.
Dude, I have shorts on.
Play in your beds.
I have shorts on. This is the kind of weather I like.
It's time to get dirty.
Get out, do something dirty. And Dave over in Oxford, he's trying to get rid of somebody. Dave, what's going on, bud?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Doing well. Yourself?
Doing well. My question for you guys is this: I've got moles like no other. This last summer, I've never had really moles, but this last summer they have tore my whole yard up. So I went to the store and got these things I stick in the ground. They like send off this pulsing noise.
Mm-hmm.
These moles are like going digging tunnels right up to it.
So that's a testimonial. That's smoke and mirrors. That's snake oil, that stuff. I don't believe in those little gimmicky.
I've heard a lot of different things about the pulsating ones. There's some about a windmill. Basically, you put in the ground and the vibration's supposed to change. I've heard all kinds of things. And the truth is, they all sort of work and they all don't work at all. It's just everybody has a different thing that works for them. That's my experience. I mean, I've had people use the worms they stick in the ground.
Tomcat worms?
And those work great for some people and not for others. I've had them use traps, and I obviously traps work, but for some reason, for certain people, they don't catch them. You know, you're going to have to try a lot of different things, unfortunately. And then we were talking in the break, in about the grub free or grub free three, right? Or
what? Right. It's high yield's product called Grub Free Zone 3.
Yep.
Okay.
And you know, that's more of a proactive approach. And the thing of it is with going after grubs, and you may not necessarily have a grub issue. So a lot of people immediately go to guns and think I have grub problems. You know, yeah. Also keep in mind, you know, moles like earthworms too. So you might have a very healthy lawn or a landscape bed that's full of earthworms or night crawlers or what have you. You know, they are insectivores, you know, so that's what they're looking for.
Okay.
You know, trying to determine if, in fact, you have a grub issue, you know, you'll need to peel back a little bit of the lawn. Or whenever you dig into your landscape, do you run into grubs?
I mean, not many.
Okay. So, therefore, you may not have a grub issue. But I will say this, David, that the last couple of years, 2 years ago especially, we had a very wet June. And guess what? In June, that's when the female Japanese beetle or the masked Schaefer beetle, she was easily able to penetrate the loose soil because it was moist, and she laid a lot more eggs than ever before. You know, so when the ground's not hard, making it difficult for her to burrow in and lay eggs, you know, the problem becomes a little bit more cumbersome. So
my whole yard, it looks like a map.
Yeah.
Like an interstate map. And it's like where they go through, it's like the grass dies off of somewhat. You know,
right.
I try to go behind it, stomp it down.
Right.
It's a mess.
Well, you know what? I've had great success trapping, and one of my favorite mole traps is from WireTech. It's a local company over in Indiana. It's like a scissor type of trap. And what you need to do real quick is identify the major thoroughfares. So when you see those little tunnel runs, go out, gently step on a couple of those, pay attention, you know, check them frequently. Those that have raised back up, usually that's a good indicator that's one of the thoroughfares. It might be like 75 to them. So that's one of the main arteries. So you want to set a trap there. And set more than one, set two, pick up two traps. They're always worth having.
Yeah, I'm ready to go war with these things.
Yeah, and
you know, I try to make my yard look nice, but they have, I mean, and they're playing games with me. Like, I'll go step this down or cover the hole up and watch it. Then 5 minutes, I walk inside and come back out, and they're back up. It's like they're watching me.
Yeah, they might be. You need to stand out there with a shovel, you know,
yeah.
And then that
yeah.
way when you see them moving, you can take care of them.
What garden center are you close to?
Probably Couches.
Yeah, go over there and see if they carry the WireTech mole trap. It's a great one. It's a scissor trap. You just step on it and set it. I killed two last fall. And actually, I would set them in the evening. The next morning, I had them.
Okay.
You know, you just got to be diligent about it and find out that main run, and you'll be successful with it. You really will.
Awesome. Thank you, guys, for
keep us posted. Okay, David.
Good luck with that.
You know, there's also those products, Bob, that you can use, like Molgo from Fertilume. Yeah. You know, it's more castor oil-related bean.
Yep.
It's a granular spread.
Mole Scram. And all those products, and that's what I was alluding to earlier, is all those products work, but not all the time. I mean, some people have great success. I had a gentleman that used the Mole Scram,
mm-hmm.
and he won't buy anything else. It worked. It worked perfect for him. And then I've had some other customers, it didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I can't explain that, but sometimes you just got to try different things. The traps are still the best. You got to stay on it, though, and you're going to get frustrated. That's what people got to remember. Yeah, these guys, I don't know how they're so smart, but they know where there's a trap there. Let's go around it. You know, they're going to be smart, and it's going to take time. And you may have one. You may have a bunch of them, you know, and you just got to keep fighting. It's a fight.
A lot of people have been having some issues here in recent years. And actually, too, talking about grubs, I used to always say this. 2 or 3 years ago when people would tell me they had some grub issues, I'm rarely would I see a lot of grub issues. Not that you couldn't have it.
Right.
Or that type of a problem.
I have seen some lately.
The last couple of years, I've seen some serious grub damage
laid
in the lawn. So really, if you want to go after the grub and you want to go after it in a timely fashion, late April into the early part of May is when you will put down Grub Free Zone 3. And what that and when it says it works all season long, Bob, it's only during grub season.
During the season. It's not all year.
Yeah, during that whole process, right.
And with any of those putting down for grub control, any of them, it is very timely. I know you just said it, and I'm going to say it again because it's so important. If you put it down too late, it doesn't work. If you put it down now, it's not going to work. So it is a timely fashion. It says it on the label. You and I do this every time I'm on the show. Read the label. It tells you when to put it
say
down
that
and
one
when
more
not
time.
To. Read the label. It is very important because, you know, people are coming in asking, I need to treat for grubs. Not yet. I mean, I don't want to sell them the product. And if I sell it to them, I'm like, do not put this down yet. You're wasting your money.
Right. Because if you go into a rainy period, you know, it's less effective. It
exactly.
starts to, you,
it's
know,
not
you lose
work.
Its efficacy.
And it has to work. You know, once they get to certain stages, the grubs right. are at certain stages. You know, once they're beyond the stage of killing them, the product doesn't work either. So if you put it down too early or too late, you're wasting your money.
Most damage is done late summer, early fall. Mm-hmm. And by September, when it rolls around, it's like people just pull that back.
You start digging in your landscape beds. If you see it, you probably have some. We usually don't have big issues in Cincinnati with grubs. To be straight honest with you, we don't. But when we do, and it's starting to seem to be a little worse lately, the moles are even more active.
Got it. And if you want a quick curative approach, anything with Dilox, that's a quick kill too for grubs. Well, that's another topic, another show. We're going to have to take another quick break and give us a call here at 749-B105. Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys, and we'll be right back.
Who can it be now?
Oh, Bob, don't quit your daytime job.
I love the bumper music.
I do, too. Good morning. Welcome to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys, and Bob Bards co-hosting in Ernie's absence today. And, we've already been covering a lot of ground and been several places, so to speak. We're like Johnny Cash.
We're everywhere.
We're everywhere, man.
We're all over.
And you're still wanting to go back to this mulch deal and touch a little bit more on it.
I do, because we're getting a lot of people talking about mulch, and there's pine straw and nuggets, and there's so much out there, and everybody always says, well, what's best? Well, it kind of in the eye of the beholder.
What is best, Bob?
Honestly, it's in the eye of the beholder. I really do. I think everybody has something. If you like black, you can use black. I think if they're all done properly, they're fine. Now, all of them have their advantages. Pine straw is better and lighter weight. We just already touched on that. And it lets air get through and moisture get through a little bit better. Nuggets are very convenient because the pine nuggets last for so long. So you don't have to put them down as frequently. And they're typically light and fluffy. The black mulch, if you're going to landscape your house and you want it to look good and you're going to put it on the market immediately, get black mulch and put the black mulch down because it always looks best for about 3-4 weeks. No doubt about it. But you got to make sure you do that properly. That's what I wanted to get to.
What do you use?
I use the All Bark Cypress mulch, the lightweight, kind of brownish red.
That's what I use.
All Bark Cypress. It is very pricey.
Yeah, but you can put your hands on it a lot cheaper.
You can, and even
you're
for
right
me,
though.
It does even for the client. But it lasts a lot longer than the other ones with color. It doesn't break down. It's very bug free,
insect
which I
resistant,
love, you know, because
decay
it's a cypress.
Resistant, yeah,
it doesn't break down, and you can fluff it, and it looks amazing,
right,
all year. Now, going back, black hardwood mulch is probably the most popular in this area. I don't think there's any question about that. Would you argue that?
I agree with you.
Okay, so that's your.
So what about black's in?
Black is in, and that's what most people probably. That's what we sell the most of. So this is the perfect day to get out and kind of loosen up that black mulch, because the black mulch sometimes will mat together. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned it already once, but we didn't get into it. And it sometimes cakes together
it
when it
crusty
rains
on top, and it doesn't allow water to permeate.
Let the water run off as opposed to run through.
Right.
So this is a great day, even before you put your new mulch down. If you can kind of rough up a little bit, if it's caked in there and kind of spread it out, it'll actually break it down a little faster. And then maybe in a few weeks, you can come back, put a nice coat of mulch on, and it'll be perfect.
This and a great tool to freshen up your mulch beds is that old hokey garden weasel.
Garden weasel.
Do you remember that?
I do.
I mean, that thing's been around forever and a day. Right. And you could buy that on WXIX TV years ago with 3 easy monthly installments.
Of what, $9.99?
Yeah. But wait, if you call now,
you get two.
Yeah, we'll give you the hand garden weasel.
But any hard tooth rake, one of the hard rakes, kind of rough up your ground is good. Even if you get a leaf rake, if you can get it into the mulch where it's a little crusty. But, you know, now's a good time to do, to get out. Today is going to be a great day. Turn that mulch over. Let that earth breathe a little bit. Loosen that mulch up.
And on the same note, you know, if in fact you're able to do that today, determine what that depth already is and don't layer on top of that.
Well,
you need to either remove it and start with new or just freshen it up and let it continue to break down.
And that's another question I get. I'm sure you do too. Should I remove the mulch every year? Should I not? What's your take? I have my opinion.
Well, like you, I use the Cypress Grade A, so I don't have to mulch every year. I can get almost 2 to 3 years out of it, so over time, it pays for itself.
It does.
Looks great. Now, some of the mulches, like, you know, a lot of people like that black platinum stuff.
Right.
Okay? It breaks down. I hear that all the time. And also, it doesn't stay black. It turns brown.
Right.
That breaks down quickly. That's evident. You can see that if you see the soil surface, it's breaking down. So go ahead and add mulch to it.
Correct.
2 to 3 inches, no more. Stay in that range. And when you get up close to your shrubs, your tree trunks, and your perennials, taper it down. And sometimes mulches can burn plants.
Absolutely. You know,
especially annuals.
I'm a big believer in if you have more than 2 to 3 inches, don't put any more on until you remove some mold. And I do like occasionally, I don't think it needs to be done every year, but I do think occasionally removing the old mulch is healthy for the plants. You don't want to tear up the root system and dig deep, but just kind of scrape it back and get some of the excess old mulch out. If you have a place to put it, that's even better.
Well, and here's the element there. There are various types of mulch, and especially that gas station mulch.
Mm-hmm.
It's real woody. It's a lot of float.
Right.
And I'm going to be honest with you, it's colored for a reason.
A lot of colored mulches are colored because they put other things in it.
It could be pallets. It could be construction, wood pieces left over. It's been ground up and are trying, you know, a lot of cellulose in it. And guess what? That's where the termite party is.
Yeah.
It really is.
And a lot of that's the depth. You know, if you're putting a good mulch down, 2 inches is great because 2 inches over time, if you'll turn it 1 or 2 times during the year, will break down really nicely and just. You almost at the end of the season want to almost see a little bit of bare dirt, and then you know you're mulching just right towards fall.
I'm with you, and you know if you're guessing about that, just take a ruler out there. You can tell what 2 or 3 inches.
I was at a place out in Kentucky earlier this week.
Why are you picking on Kentucky for?
I love Kentucky.
You do that all the Kentucky. Time.
I do. Well, I guess I spend a lot of time there. But I was in Kentucky, and these people just bought a new house over in Florence, and it's new to them. It's a 40-year-old house.
Yeah.
Beautiful place. And I start looking at the mulch, and the mulch is already about 2 inches up on the brick. So I start looking, because we're going to tear out all these old shrubs. They've been there a long time. There was about 6 inches of mulch.
Whoa. Was it crusty and white?
It was crusty and white and awful. And what should we do? I said, all of it needs to go. I said, we need to get it below the brick line. I said, you have too much mulch in here. It's broken down. You can see how it breaks down, and you can see how it's turned into some soil deep into this.
Mm-hmm.
I said, that's good, but you got too much on top. It wasn't her. It was the people before them. But we just got to break it down. We got to pull it out, get it to the right level, and then set it back in. Because if mulch is done right, it's supposed to keep moisture in, weeds out, and then also it's decorative. You know, those are the three things we want it to do. But it also can be bad. It can bring termites. It can keep extra moisture around the foundation
we don't need. Right.
You know, there's a lot of things mulch can do. It can bury trunks and burn plants. So the key is depth, and you're going to use whatever you think's best. You know, we all have our opinion, but as long as all of them are done properly, all the mulches will be fine.
You know, I really like the pine products. So,
yeah,
and pine has really gained a lot of popularity in recent years.
The nuggets.
The large nuggets.
Mm-hmm.
You have the mini nuggets.
Yep.
And I also like the pine mulch.
The pine fine?
And there's a pine fine.
Yeah.
Now, I have two different types of pine mulch. One, it's almost like the pine fines.
Okay.
Which a lot of people can use it as a soil conditioner as well when they plant.
Right.
And then the other pine mulch that I have is probably, they are chips about the size of a dime.
Okay, the mini nuggets almost.
Smaller.
Smaller than
right.
that. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and the nuggets are lightweight, and they last a long time. If you have high winds or you have a lot of dog tracks, you know what I mean? They'll move the pines because they're a little lighter weight. But it's a great mulch, and it's healthy. But you got to make sure you like the color because it's that reddish brown.
All right, I'm gonna throw another twist on this for you.
Uh-oh.
What about the mulches now that you see that are available, which I don't sell because I'm not an avid fan of it, but I want your opinion. that already has a pre-emergent product in it.
I do not. I'd rather put the pre-emergent down myself.
I'm with you. Because, and this is why for me, think about it. Those mulch bags, they'll take on moisture. Mm-hmm. And what does moisture do?
Mm-hmm.
It activates the product.
Right.
So therefore, you don't know how long that product's been activated and how effective it is truly going
to
be.
With a pre-emergent, we've talked on it before, but let's do a quick review real quick. Pre-emergent is a little granular that breaks down and then adds a barrier layer of protection, a blanket about 1 inch deep to keep weeds from germinating. So that's what a pre-emergent does. So if you put it in with the mulch and it has moisture, like you said, it's already breaking down. One of the biggest problems with pre-emergence in our landscaping and in our lawns is we put it down, we walk on it, we drive on it, and we break the barrier. So now the barrier is broken, so the weeds can germinate anyway. So imagine you have all your mulch, and you put your pre-emergent down, and you have a nice blanket, and it's perfectly even over the mulch, so no weeds can get through. But then you come through, and you start kicking some mulch around, or mm-hmm. the kids do, or an animal does, and all of a sudden that barrier gets a hole in it.
Okay.
Now you got weeds growing. Well, if you're buying it in mulch bags, one, you don't know exactly if you're putting the right amount down. You know, what if it's already broken down in the mulch because it's wet? You don't know if you got coverage on your landscape bed properly because what if we don't know what amount they're exactly putting in there. It should say on the label, but we don't know for sure. And if that mulch has been sitting around for 3 to 4 weeks, 5 weeks, and it's already wet, that product's getting used up. You're wasting your money.
Or the type of pre-emergent, like you said, that it truly is.
Right.
I don't know. Keep that in mind because we'll just take this and let it lead into, you know, protecting our landscape beds with pre-emergent products and the high yields, turf and ornamental, weed and grass topper, which contains Dimension. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to talk more about that when we come back. And if you have any calls for us, feel free to call us up, 749-B105, Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys, and we'll talk to you in just a moment. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. And if you're just getting up, good morning. It's going to be a beautiful day, temperature-wise for sure. And a little later on, it looks like we're going to get a little precipitation, and perhaps it's going to take us into Sunday as well, but that's okay. You know, it's spring showers, bring those May flowers, April showers. We're not quite yet there, but we're still in the month of March.
We're a week away.
Finally. Starting to get some of those nice temperatures that we were seeing back in February a little prematurely. But nonetheless, I think we're going to turn the corner. We have turned the corner. We're officially in the spring. And let's just cross our fingers and move forward.
Well, hey, we're a week away from opening day.
That's right.
You know, I'm a baseball guy, too. So, I mean, I love baseball. I'm a Reds fan no matter how bad or good they are. So I'm excited about opening day.
We all like opening day.
I love when the Reds
start
playing ball.
What happens opening day typically?
Snows.
There you go.
It's cold. Let's hope. Let's mark it. It's going to be a nice day.
Got it. And we have Irene with us this morning on the line. Good morning, Irene. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you today?
We're doing well. So what can we help you with?
I was just listening to your show, and mm-hmm. love it, by the way.
Thank you.
I'll be last year about a couple of things. You were just talking about the mulch, and
mm-hmm.
I have rubber mulch, and I was wondering how you thought about the rubber mulch,
It's an interesting take. It's a different approach. If I were to use rubber mulch, and I'm not telling you that it's good or bad, I look at a couple of things. One, I think it's more beneficial if you have kids around a playset area, perhaps. On the other hand, in the landscape, my only concern is and drawback is this. I don't find any added value. And when I say that, nothing's breaking down. Nothing organic is going back into the soil. On your side of things as a homeowner, you're going to probably reap anything. It's going to be a monetary value because you don't have to mulch every year.
Right.
And
yeah. That was my
fun. I think sometimes, you know, I'm not going to say it's bad or good. Like I said, I think that, you know, and I like aggregate stone as a mulch in the landscape. But mm-hmm. keep in mind, sometimes when those products heat up, if they're out in the full sun and you're watering, I think it has a tendency to pull moisture, wicks it away from the plant. Quicker than it would if it's a natural product. Bob, throw your spin on it.
The rubber mulch we've used for some people, I agree with you. It doesn't add any extra value to the soil because it's not going to break down and add any organic matter to the soil. But I understand why you want to use it and why people want to use it. I would recommend if you haven't put it down yet, definitely put a weed barrier down with that particular stuff, because it will, once some dirt gets around it, it kind of soaks down in a little bit to the soil. Also, it does move a little bit more. You have to be, if you have a high wind area, you'll find it blows a little bit, and because it's a little lighter weight. It does seem to end up in the yard a little bit occasionally. You just need to go in and clean it up. But it makes life easier for certain people, because you can put it down and it sort of is there and it stays for a long period of time. But you will have to buy some bags to replenish here and there and touch up spots where it just moves.
Yeah, that's the problem I've had. I put it down a couple years back, and you do have to refresh it a lot. But then I also have some hostas like growing around my bushes around the front.
Mm-hmm.
And it tends to burn them. So this year I'm thinking about, pulling it all out and putting some fresh, a different type of mulch there.
I was just listening. If you ask me, what would you use it in your own yard? The answer would be no. I would not use the rubber mulch in my own yard. I would use a pine straw. I would use something else. But I know they're a little more work, and I don't know your situation, but I would use something else.
Okay. Oh, great. That answered my question. I kind of knew that, but I just wanted to double check that. I was listening for you to mention something about the rubber, but you guys didn't.
So well, we're glad you called.
Yeah,
we're glad you called. Thanks for listening.
And I have one more question.
Sure.
I was finally went over to Ed Feed and Feed yesterday and picked up my first step. I'm a little late at that, but anyways, I wanted to do that today, this morning, and I hadn't mowed my grass yet. So, I mean, it's kind of high in spots. It's really green and healthy looking, and it's a little high.
Well, try and get a mowing in before the rain, and then get your fertilizer down and all that good stuff.
And that won't hurt.
No, not at all.
Great. That won't hurt anything.
Not at all.
Do it all on the same day. Great. Nope. Yep. Awesome. That was the question.
All right, Irene, you have a great weekend.
Much.
You're welcome.
You do the same. You have a great day.
There's going to be a lot of people mowing and wanting to know that. That was a great tip. When you mow and your grass is too high right now, raise your blade. You really only want to try to cut a third off. That's the most. In a lot of people's grass, it's too high. So you definitely want to make sure, if you have to, raise your blade. That may mean you have to cut it in a couple days. That's okay. That's going to be much better for the lawn.
Right. And I would mow it first, get it manicured, then put your fertilizer down, and then watch some hoop later on. That's what I'm encouraging people to do.
Absolutely.
But we have Leah with us, too, from Hamilton. Good morning, Leah. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. So, what do you have going on with, you have a shag birch or a shag, or a hickory?
It's a shag birch bark. Tree,
okay.
But it's real shaggy, like it peels the bark off almost like it's paper.
It exfoliates.
You know, those decorative ones that people have in their yard.
Right.
It has every single day for months, if not since last fall, I go out into my yard and there's mass amounts of branches, both small, like 5 to 10 inches long, all the way up to branches that are anywhere from 4 to 6 feet long, laying in my yard.
Welcome to my world. That's what I worked on yesterday morning before I went into work. I just raked all that stuff up. And a lot of that came down when we had some of those, high winds, through some of those little thunderstorms that we may have had here just recently.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you have an older birch tree.
It's only about maybe 14, 15 years old.
Yeah. Well established. How tall is it?
It's probably, I would say, 25 feet tall. I mean, it's budding out really well
right
now, but every single day, rain or shine, there's mass branches laying on my ground.
It will.
And I can literally reach up and grab one, and it'll snap right off.
Yeah, it's pretty common. It's kind of like a shedding part of it as well. I deal with it all the time. Now, I have to get up into my gutters. I have some stems up in my gutters. And I was telling my dad yesterday, I was like, I had to get out there and rake that stuff up. And I was feeling a little bad and guilty because some of that stuff was over in my neighbor's yard.
Mm-hmm.
I love that tree, but not when it does that. And,
right.
And it's just common. And actually, it subsides to a degree once things, once it flushes out and gets growing.
Uh-huh.
And there's been situations where I've limbed it up, I've trimmed it out a little bit, but pretty common and most expected, to say the least.
Well, I have one branch in particular also that's probably about 2 to 2.5 inch diameter
uh-huh.
that is dripping like a faucet. It has, just has a constant pour of water coming out of it. And it's literally gouged a hole out in the ground underneath of it and actually exposed some of the tree roots. And that started probably about a week and a half ago.
Interesting.
And it's probably about 10 feet off the ground, the branches. And you can see it. I mean, even the bugs have started to draw themselves to that one particular spot, but you can stand under it and literally get soaked. It's just constantly dripping water out of it.
Well, things are translocating, you know, all of its energy and a lot of moisture is being drawn up into a lot of trees right now, you know, just at that time of year. But
she might want to have an arborist.
I would have an arborist take a look at that because as you're describing that, that's a little over excessive. There's something not right there.
It's crazy.
I would get a licensed arborist to take a look at that just to be safe because we want to make sure that we don't run into any other future damage because we have a soft spot and a weak spot in the tree. That would be worth, even if they charge you a little bit, having it looked at just to make sure the health of the tree is in good shape. It may not be anything. It may be nothing to worry about. Kind of like the shedding is perfectly fine. But when you start talking about that kind of moisture and you're getting a soft spot in the bark, I would definitely want to have that looked at.
Right. I have a very large maple tree that's probably about 25, maybe 30 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Probably about 25 feet away from it. And several years back, I just happened to look over. And the tree has a large protruding area where the trunk goes up, and then there's two major branches that come out from there. But that top of that, the actual trunk portion has a big knot on it, and water was literally flowing out of that at one point. And at first I thought maybe it was sap because the front of the tree was soaked, and then I touched it, and it was just pure, clear water. That's all it was, and it was just the strangest thing. I mean, it literally had like a little river of water coming out of the front of it.
Yeah, when you see stuff like that, that's not normal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just as Bob stated, it's one of those things. As a homeowner, you can't afford not to have somebody, a professional, come out who's ISA certified, you know, an arborist, and say, "Hey, you know, give me a little insight here. What's going on with my tree?" Because you know, it's very difficult and very costly to replace a tree. It's easier to try and help a tree along than it is to pay somebody $800 to $1,500 to come and remove it, and you never get a tree of that size back right away.
Right.
And I'm sure that your birch is in good shape. Something has injured it or gotten into it or something's happened, and just have that looked at, okay? And follow up with us.
I will.
You ever get on Facebook?
I do.
I would love to see that, what you're describing. If you don't mind, if you were to use your phone and take a photo of that area and send us a couple of photos.
I can do that.
Yeah, that sounds very interesting.
Yeah, I'd like to see it myself. I'd really like to see it.
Yeah, I will do that. What's the Facebook site that
it's
look for?
In and around the house.
Okay.
All one word.
All right. I will do that.
All right. Leah, you have a great weekend. Right. Thank you. And follow up with us and tell us what you find out. And very interesting when you hear those kind of stories, and especially about trees. And guys, I think immediately I just want to protect them and look after their well being. But we're going to continue our tree topic because it's our plan of the week. We got to take a quick break, and we're going to be talking about Japanese maples when we come back. Give us a call at 749-B105. Good morning. Welcome to In and Around the House. And I'm Tony Works with Ernie Brown. And Ernie's out on special assignment again. And in his absence today, our good friend Bob from Barge Nursery is co-hosting the show with me. And thanks as always, Bob.
Thanks for
and,
having me.
And the plant of the week. And we were talking about this earlier in the week. Who does not like or love the Japanese maple?
I don't know. And if you don't love it, there's something wrong. Because
there's something wrong.
There's so many different varieties. There's weeping. There's green leaf, red leaf, cut leaf, broad leaf, big, little. If you need, this might be one of the most versatile trees in the landscaping because there's so many options.
I have to agree. You know, there are so many various types of species of the Japanese maple that you can take it from A to Z, like, for example, one of my favorites, and I don't see this one out there like I used to, it's the last two or three, 4 years, one called Ryuzen.
Ah, you like him, huh?
Yes. Love it, love it, love it. My neighbor bought one from us maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
Right.
And it's beautiful.
Yeah.
And if you have a place where you have space constraints, Ryuzen is one of those. That it's a true weeping form.
Mm-hmm.
Gets about 5 feet wide, give or take.
Green leaf, too, right?
Green leaf.
Yep.
Beautiful red fall color, orangish colors in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
Probably you might see it top out around 10 foot, give or take.
And trimmable.
Trimmable. Just a beautiful, beautiful specimen. But for whatever reason, did you ever have those in your nursery?
I don't sell a lot of those. The one problem with Japanese maples is you're not going to find, you know, hundreds and thousands of every variety. There's too many varieties. So growers are only growing certain ones. And there's a few specific growers throughout the country who grow a lot of them. But once again, you're not going to see a bunch of varieties of certain ones in the garden center. You're going to see the standard ones, Blood Good, which I love. And we're going to talk more about that. Lace Leaf is the Cut Leaf Crimson Queen. Tumorakia. There's a lot of different ones out there that I love, but you're not going to see them. So if you find something at the garden center, it's a specimen, and you're going to have one of the few on a lot of these Japanese maples, and that's one of them.
Yeah, they're unique, and this is the beauty of it. Going to a local garden center or a local nursery, unlike some of the big boxes, we're going to put our hands on these specialty specimens, and you're going to have something unique in your landscape, and really... Jim up at Lakeview Nursery,
yes.
He does a great job with Jap maples, and he's probably one of the type of guys that's very enthusiastic about Japanese maples, and he's always willing to try and bring in different varieties. The varieties, too, that you don't find a lot of.
Correct.
Which makes them even more unique and really cool to have. Not where it's just your general run-of-the-mill type of tree.
And what I love about Japanese maples specifically, what I like about them, is every single one of them can be different. Mm-hmm. You buy a boxwood, they're pretty much all the same. I mean, you might trim it round, you might trim it oval.
Right.
You might trim it into a cone. You can change it that way. You know, but for the most part, they're the same. Where a Japanese maple, you could have a cut-leaf Japanese maple, and one might be orange fall color. One might be... red fall color.
Mm-hmm.
You might have a green leaf. You might have a red leaf. But then you can also trim them, which we recommend, and you and I are big into hand pruning these, to where you can allow the branch structure to really show.
That's when they get really creative. And then if you use landscape lighting to accent that branching and that structure, you talk about curb appeal.
Right.
That's got a cool look.
And when we buy like regular maple trees or flowering crab apples, we want straight trunks and we want good full head on top with good branch structure. But on Japanese maples, I like the ones that are unique and they have weird branch structure and they're a little curvy and they're unique. And, you know, you can really have some fun with those. But they can grow fast if you never prune, so getting in there and thinning them out is always a good thing.
Yeah, you can bonsai, kind of, so to speak, some of those Japanese maples. And the dissectums that you're talking about, too, they're grafted in a lot of ways where you have the low graft.
Correct.
Which I really like, which I find difficult to find
a
lot of times.
They are hard to find.
Because that can really stay low in the landscape in the right spot. And then you have the typical grafted ones that might be, 3-4 feet?
Correct.
And they'll typically grow, 6 to 8 on average, give or take, and almost the same width.
Right. And for those who are listening that don't understand the grafting part, they're always grafted on a trunk, and they'll have certain heights. So that's where the tree starts, just to try to simplify it as much as possible. So you might come up a foot, and then all of a sudden the branch structure starts. What might make that plant unique is all of a sudden it becomes flat and really starts to spread out.
Mm-hmm.
So for certain people, that's a perfect one to find. Sometimes difficult. We've got some 2-footers at the garden center, which really makes it nice. If you want a small ornamental tree or you need something short, you can keep that trimmed. I have a lace leaf Japanese maple that is only 5 foot tall. It's 20 years old, but it's 5 feet tall. I just keep it trimmed. And maybe even a little less than that, but it can get bigger if you want it to. Or the graft that's 3 foot tall. That's going to give you a lot taller tree, and that may be what you're looking for. So, you know, as you get into the garden center, we want to look at some of those things. You know, that's a little preparation. We've gone through this a lot. Preparing and thinking about what you want before you buy it is always a big benefit.
And what's nice about the Japanese maple is it's shallow rooted somewhat. So even if you're getting up close to the house, you don't want to be on the house by any means.
Never.
Give a plant enough space to grow to what it's capable of growing to. But, you know, you don't have to worry about anything being invasive from a root standpoint.
Correct.
So that's important. And also, you know, I like to fertilize my Japanese maple periodically, and I like to use plant tone on it from Espoma because I want it to... It's organic, and it's like eating well. I don't want to juice it with a water-soluble that's in the green box, and you know what I'm talking about.
Right.
Those are not the type of products you want to feed your trees with.
Right. And you know me, I love the Fertilome Start and Grow. Always have, right? Always will. I love it. It's just a good general fertilizer. The Espoma's got some good stuff, too. And we're kind of getting into that stage, you know. I like to start getting ready to fertilize my shrubs. I'll hit as soon as they start to break some dormancy. And I start to see good buds, and I see a little bit of leaf on it. I don't like to get them started too early because, you know, in Cincinnati, it's going to probably snow on opening day because it usually gets cold. But, you know, so we don't want to get it too early. But, you know, now's going to be the time to start thinking about getting that fertilizer on those shrubs.
And that's why I don't like to use the water solubles. They get into the plant quicker. You're starting to get a plant to put on growth, sometimes a little prematurely. And then all of a sudden you get that cold snap and it's like, boom, all that new growth for nothing because it gets damaged rather easily.
It's a quick vitamin shot, but then it's also used up quick. So I don't like the liquids for my shrubs where you mix it with the water and pour it on there because it also doesn't last very long.
I like that nice, easy, eating well. Mm-hmm. It works into the soil. It takes its time and it gets up into the plant. And I just think overall, it makes for a healthier shrub. It
I
makes
agree.
For a healthier
Now, when
tree.
Are you going to fertilize yours? Because you have one, and you have a blood good, don't you?
I do.
Yeah.
Well, and no, I will not fertilize it until I get into, you know, the middle, latter part of April as it's starting to put some growth on.
Right.
But I know that we still got to push into May with that last average frost date. Keep that in mind. We'll talk more about the cultural requirements and what we need to think about with our Japanese maples. Give us a call at 749-B105, and we'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. And, boy, who does not like these temperatures being in the 70s and then turning it down a notch or two, going into the 50s at night? A far cry than what we saw a couple of weeks ago, that's for sure. And I think spring is finally here, Bob. What
it's
do you think?
It's starting to feel like February.
It's here.
Remember February.
February.
We were all teased right before the Home and Garden
Big
Show.
Time.
And it was 70 degrees, almost 80 degrees. And you know what? We knew it wasn't going to last. And it didn't. And there was a lot of things kind of got hit with a little bit of, you know, the zap from the cold. But
right.
Spring's coming, and we're ready.
Well, we're officially in spring, so hopefully she is here to stay or he is here to stay, however you want to term it as being. But we were talking about the Japanese maples before we went into the break and some cultural requirements as to really keeping one healthy, actually putting it in its right place. And this is really important. Some of the summers that we have that, you know, as we get really, we heat up, it gets really hot, and some people don't like the water. Okay, which is an essential item for life here on Earth. But I'm here to tell you that, you know, you will start seeing a little bit of lightening in color in your Japanese maple, in the foliage, in the leaf, in the middle part of the summer or latter part of the summer months. And a lot of it has to do with heat,
right?
Having it in the right location. If you can give them a little bit of shade, you know, maybe some of that hot afternoon shade, that's ideal.
I agreed. Morning sun is
the
gonna
best.
Be best for them. Sometimes you got to put them, you want one and you put it on a western exposure. Okay, that's a little hot. As long as you know going into it that you're going to get some leaf curl in August towards the end of the leaves because it's getting hot and you're going to get a little leaf spot on
scorch.
It. A little scorch. It's cosmetic. It doesn't usually hurt the tree unless you don't water at all. Then that's not going to be a scorch. That's going to be the leaves are going to dry up and die. But morning sun, if you have a spot for it, morning sun, I think, is the absolute best for your Japanese maples.
And there was one that you liked a lot that you were talking about the other day, butterflies.
Butterfly. And I'll tell you what, it's not always the hardiest around here, I don't think, sometimes. It's a variegated leaf. But it's got a nice, nice bark to it. It's an upright version, kind of a vase shape.
Right.
And that's one thing about the maples, not to go off topic real quick, but every one of them is slightly different shaped. And that's what's nice about the Japanese maples.
They're all, I think they're all well-behaved.
Exactly.
If you want my honest opinion.
They are, and they're trimmable. But the butterfly is one that we used to sell a lot of. I don't sell much anymore, but it's variegated leaf, and then it would kind of get a pinkish color on it, which I loved. You know, and there was another one that I don't sell a lot of that I love, but you know, I just don't get a lot of them. Not a lot of growers are growing them. Is I think it was the Sago Kaku.
Sango Kaku.
Thank you. That's what
yeah.
it was.
Yeah, no, the coral bark.
The coral bark.
Beautiful bark.
Yes, the bark itself in the fall when the leaves are off is absolutely gorgeous.
It's not a noisy bark. It's a beautiful bark.
It's a beautiful bark.
Right. So, gorgeous. But, and it stands out, especially in the winter.
It does. So there's a lot of neat varieties out there.
Mm-hmm.
As a designer, I love to use the Japanese maple. It's one I use quite often. It gives you a specimen look. It generally fits a purpose, so they're well behaved, like you said. They're very trimmable. If you want it to be a perfectly shaped round ball, you can actually shear it. Now, you know, when you do that, the inner growth is going to be very full, dense. The branch structure
woody.
Is going to be no leaves.
Yeah.
It's going to be all woody, and all the leaf structure is going to be on the outside of the plant. But you can do that, and that's what's nice about the Japanese maples.
Mm-hmm.
You know, typically, I like to hand prune them so you can see the interesting trunk structure. But
I like to prune them, too. Talking about pruning, you know, you can prune them late in the season, but I like to prune stuff like that when the foliage drops.
Correct.
If you start pruning a maple now, it's not the ideal time to prune a maple. If you have to, you can.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to kill it, but don't make that a common practice.
No, but if they're
flowing now. They're
exactly.
starting to move.
It's kind of like the lady that called about, you know, the water coming out. You know, everything's moving.
Right.
Everything's moving. So somewhere in there, she got a little bit of a problem, and that's why you're seeing the water. But, you know, you're going to have that. So trimming now maybe not be the best. If you have some winter damage, like you know the branch is dead, you will get that in your Japanese maples, especially in the lace leaf varieties, the cut leaf varieties, the dissectums. You're going
to
get that.
Yeah, so they're more susceptible to that too.
But you'll see it. It's a slightly different color bark.
Yeah.
It's dead. So now's a good time to be getting that out.
Yeah, and if it's not pliable, that's an indicator as well. Or if you can just kind of take your thumb and index finger and just move it, and if it snaps, prune back to where it doesn't, where it's pliable.
And there is going to be some of that.
Right.
It happens on the maples. And none of it's a problem. It's going back to the birch. It's going to drop some, you know, you're going to have some branch structure drop. Well, as long as you know ahead of time, it's not a big deal other than cleaning it up. But you're going to have some dieback, and you need to get in there, and you need to remove it.
Right. You know, I have to tell you about one of the Jap maples that we got this year that's in the nursery. It's called Katsura, and it's fairly hardy, zones 5 to 9. It can get around 10 to 12 feet. And right now, the foliage is starting to emerge on it. I was showing you this photograph earlier in the show.
Yes.
And it's got this chartreuse color with this orange-tinted margins around the leaf.
Very unique.
Beautiful.
Very unique.
And as it matures, it turns a bright green. And then during the fall season, you're getting seasonal interest here with Katsura. During the fall, it turns the most beautiful oranges and yellows. You know, just those combinations. And, you know, when you get that kind of seasonal interest, and then when you go through the winter months, just the structure of the Japanese maple trees, for the most part, so interesting. A lot of character. And I like to keep them pruned out a little bit, opened on the inside. So those branches, you know, what's there takes on a very unique look and growth pattern.
Sure, and then we talk about this from the landscape side, which is a little bit more of mine, of what we would do with those Japanese maples when there's no branch, when there's no leaves on them. That's when you have the landscape lighting. And if you thin these branch structure out and you see most Japanese maples are very unique when it comes to how they've branched. So the lighting looks amazing on it. It reflects off different sides of the bark, and it really adds some really cool winter interest. And one thing you mentioned real quick, you talked about how the Japanese maples are budding out. This is one of those times, and I know I've given this tip two or three times, where if you have one of those old set of twinkle Christmas lights, if we get a 30-degree day and these leaves start coming out, you know, you don't want to throw a piece of plastic on top of it. That's really bad for those plants. But you want to throw a sheet on top, but if it looks like it's going to be cold for a few days, this is one of those times where having that extra set still is handy, because we're going to get a couple cold days still. I mean, our frost-free day is, what, the 15th, something like that, of May?
May 15th.
May 15th.
But you know what I'm getting out of you right now is that Kentucky boy. Because a lot of people over in Northern Kentucky leave their Christmas lights on all year.
Yeah, well,
you don't do that,
we're going to call them Easter lights.
Yeah, so. Easter lights. You don't do that. I've seen where people have left those lights on trees, and eventually the tree just engulfs the strand.
Yeah, and there's nothing you can do about it. I do have a strand or two stuck in my blue spruce 30 foot high because I can't find them anymore.
See, I told you, I can sense that. I can sense that.
They got stuck.
I climbed
in a ladder one time. Quick story. So, you know, do the things you're not supposed to do. Put the ladder up into the tree and climb up in it, and the tree's starting to lean over. I did that. I started to do it once, and I said, you know what? I'll leave my lights up. They're staying in there. So. The tree's grown out past it. I have no idea where they're at. When the tree comes down, I'll find them.
They're in the lights.
The lights are
in the tree. It's grown terrible. Around it. You know what? I just sensed that about you. When you were talking about those Christmas lights, something said, hey,
it's ask the
you.
Gift that keeps on giving all year through.
That's right, Clark. But I'll tell you what, you can't go wrong with the Japanese maple, that's for sure. And just keep in mind, you know, get out to your local garden centers and nurseries. This is a specimen. You know, we're trying to get you those unique varieties.
Right.
And if you want to be different and unique in your landscape, I think this is one of those.
And we know you want to be different and unique.
Yeah, you don't want what everyone else does. You know, what would it look like if everyone drove the Camry around?
Well.
Right? It would be pretty boring.
It would be. So
that's why we want
variety. That's why we do. But the Japanese maple will give you that variety. You know, it'll give you. There's so many different sizes, and even the same plant. You could take the same blood good Japanese maple and have somebody trim it 10 different ways and have 10 different looks on the tree, and that's what's really unique. So you might have two spots where you need something unique. You might buy two Japanese maples, but trim them completely different, and that would be okay.
It's funny you say that because we have an old blood good, which is a great specimen, by the way, out by our front sign mm-hmm. at the garden center. And it has been hacked back, cut up on, just you name it.
Right.
Right near the blacktop, just takes a beating, full sun, and it looks like a shrub. Every year,
but it's
two or three or four people will say, what is that shrub out there?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm here to tell you, really, it's a tree. It's supposed to be a tree.
Well, it is, but you just trim it that way.
You just trim it that way.
And that's what's really unique about these particular Japanese maples. They can look completely different. I have a customer that lives behind the nursery. He's got a Japanese maple on the low graft, and it's about 8 feet wide, but it's 2 feet tall.
Isn't that cool?
It is really cool.
Yeah.
Really, really a unique plant. I've had mine for 20 years. It's about 5x5. I just keep it really trimmed and thinned out, and occasionally, about every 3 or 4 years, I'll give it a good butcher job. I mean,
right.
It's clean, but I cut it hard.
Wow. Well, we're going to take another quick break. If you have a question for Bob or myself, feel free to give us a call here at 749-B105. When we come back out of the break, we're going to talk about what's in color right now, something that you can add to the front of the home or wherever it is that you need color because it's starting to pop. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. And, boy, we're having some really nice weather. I hope you get out to your local garden centers and nurseries and pick up some of those supplies that you need to start getting things taken care of in your landscape. Take care of all these chores this morning. Maybe put a nice new fresh mowing onto your lawn. Pick up the three-step program, the drench. Start taking care of all those things around the landscape, that's for sure. And we're going to go to Mark in Fairfield because it sounds like he has one of those trees that you have, Bob.
He has an Easter tree?
I don't know. Mark, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys.
What do you have a few light sets up in your tree?
Yeah, I got a string of lights in my cedar.
He's not from Kentucky.
He's not from Kentucky either.
No. Were you born in Kentucky and moved?
Wait, let me get my flying on.
So, how long have the lights been in the tree?
This is the second year now. I plug them back up. They come on. They came on this past.
So they're still working. All right.
Yeah.
You know, when you get to 4th of July, you can call it a 4th of July tree, too.
Ooh, now we're talking.
So you're finding it tough to remove or get the lights out of the tree? Are they too high up?
They're too high up now. That thing.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I put some of that... evergreen root spikes in the ground around it. It gets plenty of water from the gutter spout, right?
Yeah. There. Well, you know, I the only problem that I see with something of the sort, I don't think the copper's going to be an issue. It's more of a girdling effect or a strangling effect, you know, if it's around the trunk. Other than that, I don't see where, you know.
It shouldn't hurt anything. Except
no.
Unless it's wrapping too tight around a branch or trunk, yeah. And the trunk tries to grow around the wire, and eventually it'll girdle it and kill that part of the branch or possibly kill the tree if it's down too low. So, but you really shouldn't have much trouble.
I string my lights vertically.
No, you should be fine then.
Well, I'm all right. Because my grandpa said if you put a copper penny in a trunk of a tree, it'll kill it.
I've heard that too. I don't know how true that is, or if that's an old wives' tale or what. I've even heard copper nails. If someone has done that, I'm all ears. I'd love to hear about it
just to see if it's true or not. But I've heard it, but I've never tried it.
Could I ask a follow up question? You guys know anything about some kind of home remedy for moles tearing up my yard?
Yeah, we were talking about that earlier. You know, you're just going to have to try a bunch of things. You're going to have to try traps are still the best. There are some products out there that are chase products. You'll want to probably put down a grub control if you have grubs, and that'll be done in May. But you're just going to have to try a bunch of things. I would find your local independent garden center and go up and talk to them, and they'll talk to you about some of the remedies that are working best for their customers.
Well, yeah, I know in Massachusetts you just can't trap them and let them free in somebody else's yard. That's against the law there, but I didn't know there's a law here.
No, not that I know of. Have at it.
No, but you better don't dump them in my yard.
All right, have a good weekend.
I'll look for Easter lights in July. Nowhere to put them.
There you go, Mark. We'll see you, buddy. All right, we got to take another quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk color. We need a burst of color this time of year, and who's not feeling it?
I'm ready.
Give us a call at 749-B105, Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. We'll be right back. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. And the forecast is like this if you're just getting up and looking outside. Partly cloudy for most of the morning, then becoming a little heavier as we progress throughout the afternoon with a chance of showers this evening. And keep that in mind, you know, those showers bring Mayflowers. So we need a little bit of rain. And tomorrow.
March flowers.
March flowers.
March flowers. Color.
And tomorrow, showers and thunderstorms throughout most of the day. So having said that, I want you to get out to your local garden centers and nurseries. I want you to do a couple of things. I want you to pick up your Fertiloom 3-step program. Get that down. If you've yet to mow your lawn, maybe you might want to do that today by noon, early afternoon. And then guess what? You can watch a little bit of basketball
later.
Let's go,
X.
You'll have all that stuff done. And if you're like me and you were putting off some of those chores that you need to take care of around the landscape, I did finally get my ornamental grasses cut back yesterday.
Good for you.
So I'm so proud of myself.
Way ahead.
That's just one of those things you just keep putting off. And it's like, I got to do it.
And now it's time for what?
Basketball.
And then also, but today, though, it's time. You've got everything cleaned up, so it's time for that spring color.
Yes.
I'm a color guy. I always have been. I'm a color nerd. So I like color. I like flowering color. I like greens, too.
All right.
But
I like color, too, but I'm all about texture.
Ah, okay.
So throw it my way. What's hot? What's colorful right now?
Well, obviously, you got the pansies and violas.
I'm with you.
You know, the pansies. You can get them in little baskets. You can plant them in the yard. You can put them in planters. And they're going to take the cold, which is really nice. They can handle the cold. So, you know, if you got some people coming for Easter and you know you want to have a nice little arrangement kind of in front of the house, pansies, you can get them started now, get them growing. And
they'll take you all the way up to the middle of May.
They'll take you at least to the middle of May.
Yeah, and you will not, at that point in time, want to remove those out of your window boxes or your containers. Right. I hear it every year, but they look so good.
But you're going to have to remove them because the summer heat's coming, and you're going to need your annuals.
And they don't like it hot.
But, you know, Easter's, a little later this year, so the pansies, you start getting those planted now, they're going to really be amazing usually by then.
You know what? Violas, hot. They are hot, hot, hot. Typically, violas for us in the garden center, they're not sought after as much as just your traditional pansy. Yeah. And the viola is a smaller bloom.
Correct.
I will tell you this. I think they are more fragrant.
Yes, I agree. And,
yeah.
You know, but you got to have a bunch of them really to get the big fragrance. So if somebody's just got a small arrangement, I don't think you're going to have this overwhelming.
Bob, I can't see and I can't hear. The only thing that's good is my sniffer.
Is your sniffer still good?
It's getting better. And as you get older, you get all this nose hair, ear hair, all that other gross stuff. But I can still taste and smell things. I think the violas are hands down.
Well, I agree with you. I agree with you. They're more fragrant. But I'm just saying, I think, like, if you put, you know, three plants in front of your house, you're not going to have this overwhelming
arrangement. Oh, no. It's not going to knock you down when you walk outside, a lilac.
Exactly. But, yeah, they're beautiful. But I love the colors. And they have the colors mixed on the flowers. You don't have to just buy purples or just buy yellows. They have all the colors mixed together. And it's just a beautiful palette of color. And you can really have some fun with it.
And when you talk about color, I think when you plant a drift or a sea of a lot of something with the same color, it's more of an impact.
I agree.
It's vibrant. And you can really see it from the curbside.
And the pansies and violas, you're not planting for the entire year. So go ahead and plant them a little fuller. Get a couple extra baskets. Get a couple extra plants. And go ahead and plant your baskets a little fuller because you're going to really enjoy them from now until about Mother's Day. And even though they're going to look great, you're going to want to pull them out and get ready for your annuals. But go ahead and do it. That way you really enjoy the color because there's nothing quite like when spring's coming around and all the flowering trees. I mean, we love it. So go ahead and do a little bit in your pots too.
What about anything else on the horizon color-wise?
This is Ernie's favorite, the creeping phlox.
Yeah.
I think Ernie loves the creeping phlox, and they're about ready to get into the full show. This is why you buy creeping phlox. It's coming in a couple weeks. But the ones in the garden center are already bloomed out because they've been in the greenhouses a little bit, warmed up a little bit.
Mine are looking good.
Yeah.
I have the blue. Everyone loves the blue.
Yep.
Drummond's pink.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking great. And this is the time of year, you know, you're going to see creeping phlox, the subulatus. I mean, they're cranking. They're great on hillsides.
Mm-hmm.
They're awesome within a rock garden.
Right.
White. You can also find them with the little candy stripe colors, but you don't see that as often.
Not as often.
If you want something different, look for those. But predominantly, it's more the
pinks, purples, and white.
Yes.
That's a predominant color. But this is their peak time. Mm-hmm. I mean, we talk about perennials all the time, and everybody wants color year-round. If they could develop a phlox that would bloom all summer.
Boy, you would retire rich.
Oh, everybody would use it. But, you know, this is their peak season, so enjoy it. Go get a few. Put them in the garden. You know in the summer they're going to just be green, so you got to have some other things mixed with it. But this is the time that they show, and you might as well enjoy it.
You know, there's some perennials, too, that are starting to show some nice color, like Iberis,
mm-hmm.
you know, Candy Tuft, Purity, yes. Beautiful white color. Another, you know, a great type of perennial plant to put into a rock garden. Armeria, you know, yes. Those are really looking good. Columbine. Hellebores.
Linton Rose. Mm-hmm. Now,
yeah.
That's a shade one, which is really nice for those who have shade. Now, obviously, the leaves aren't out yet, but still, even a house may block the sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great place to get some perennial color, and it still blooms.
I'll tell you, the hellebores, you get so much value for that plant.
Mm-hmm.
And when you walk by those, you know, those blooms, they're just kind of like, they're
just
knotted.
Hanging there.
They're knotted downward, like they're just nodding down, acknowledging you mm-hmm. as you walk by the garden bed.
Yeah.
Great border plant. They're beautiful in a drift. That is a plant, too, that will volunteer readily.
Yes.
All of a sudden, you have a pretty sizable bed. Now, those new volunteers, you know, don't be concerned if they're not blooming the first season or second season. It takes a couple of years for those new volunteers to come about into bloom. So they can be wonderful in the landscape.
And it's not a bad plant foliage when it's done blooming.
No.
You know, like the phlox is just a carpet. It's just a carpet of green. It's not even, it's really not a pretty green. Let's be honest.
No,
it's not a pretty green.
No,
it's limey green, kind of just, it's a light green. It almost looks like it needs some nutrients, but it's a beautiful flower, and I love the plant. But the hellebores, you know, you kind of clean up the dead blooms. It's still a very pretty plant.
Mm-hmm. You know, another shade plant that I like this time of year, and we don't talk about it much, is pulmonaria,
yes.
Lungwort.
That's because it's hard
raspberry
to get.
Splash right now mm-hmm. is just giving you a splash. Beautiful foliage on it this time of year with a variegation, you know, there's spots in it.
It's a beautiful plant. That is one of my favorite shade perennials.
Yes.
I absolutely love that one, and I love Lamium as well.
Mm-hmm.
But the pulmonaria, it's a beautiful plant. We've got some that's got a bluish flower on it up at the shop, and it's getting ready to bloom. It is gorgeous. It's not the easiest to find to sell. I've been I try to get it and grow it, and I'm trying to do it to sell to people because it's a great plant.
It's funny that you say that. You're right. You don't see it readily available all the time. There was one and has the foliage on it, and once they're out of bloom, the foliage is just as nice as the bloom.
I agree.
And that's where I like the foliage. I like the colors of the foliage. I like the texture. And it all comes into play in the shade garden.
It works great underneath a larger Japanese maple tree.
Right.
We have it underneath. It's on a western exposure, but it's shaded by a white fringe tree. And it just does fantastic in the landscape bed. We do nothing to it. It just grows. We really neglect it. And it's still a great.
What about Dicentra, bleeding hearts, mm-hmm. this time of year? You're starting to see those guys make their way. There was one, I can't remember the name. I'll have to look this up and cheat. It has the chartreuse green foliage, mm-hmm. and it's stunning.
Yeah, just the bleeding heart is just such a unique flower, the way it hangs, and it's just a beautiful plant. I wish they bloomed a lot longer. You know, like a lot of shade perennials, you know, they don't bloom as long as you want them to. Yeah. But that's where you mix the different things. And it really gives you a nice show.
Bob, we have to go over to your neck of the woods in Kentucky.
Not the Easter tree,
but we're going to head over to Independence. We have Heather from Independence with us this morning. Good morning, Heather. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Going okay. What's going on?
So I moved into a house a few years ago off the Mount Zion exit. And it's a ranch home in a cul-de-sac. Mm-hmm. So we have that pie-shaped yard. It's very small up front. And originally there was a tree there, but they ripped it out, the previous owner, and put in lilies. Well, I'm allergic, so we pulled those out, and we want to put a tree back in. But I don't want something, one, that's going to be too big for that small of an area,
mm-hmm.
and two, that is going to completely block our house because we already have a hard time getting a good view of our house in the cul-de-sac.
Where is this tree to be planted? Like, it's not in the center of the yard by any means, is it? Is it kind of offset in front of the home, off to the side? Is it on the other side of the driveway?
Yeah, like if you were to look at our house, it looks like we're pretty much all driveway.
Uh-huh.
With a very small bit of yard to the left of the driveway and a little bit bigger to the right that leads to our front door.
Mm-hmm.
And so it would be off to the right of the driveway, so off center.
And something blooming? Or
I would like something that has a bloom in early spring just because we have very little color
mm-hmm.
this time of year. But I just would like something low-lying just because it is a ranch. I don't want it to become too tall.
Right.
But I don't want it to completely be a huge...
Would something around tree. The six-foot range be a little too tall? Because there's a lot of options with that. And Bob was talking a little earlier in the show to another caller about some of the tree form, like lilac, small tree form standards. We call those standards. So you have a lilac shrub that's grafted onto another tree. Those are relatively nice, beautiful in the landscape. Also are the hydrangea trees.
Mm-hmm.
You're starting to find those more readily available as well in the nurseries and local garden centers.
Another one that might be nice is a little bit larger. It's about 10, 12 foot, but one of the dwarf sergeant crab apples. You know, something small that's flowering. It's also trimmable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if she wanted a few options, that would be one that would be a good one. How tall, what would be the tallest that the tree could get? What would be the max height that you would prefer?
I think it would be into that 6 to 8 foot range because at that point, I think I would just be completely swallowing what little bit of the front of the house that we get to see.
And, you know, that's... although you're not going to get the bloom color, is this full sun or is there any shade whatsoever?
No shade at all. It's completely full sun.
Yeah, I think if you were to do something like a hydrangea tree, be it a little lime or a quick fire.
The other thing that might be nice is a low graft snow fountain weeping cherry.
Yes.
You can get one that starts out at only about 4 feet tall. It has the beautiful white blooms. Now, it'll grow and cascade to the ground very quickly because you're starting with a short graft, but you can trim that, and that would be a beautiful tree in that spot, too.
It would look like a little lollipop if mm-hmm. you were trimming it.
Yeah, and that would be a good one.
I think that would be really nice. Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
Well,
I love talking about little trees.
Did you say you're out there Mount Zion Road?
Yeah, so I'm right down from Maddox.
Well, stop at Maddox or go over and see Todd or Steve at Baton's, too.
Yeah, both of them should have.
Yeah, you have two good, you have two nice nurseries there close to you that you're going to find what you need.
Is that other one the one off of Frogtown?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Have a great weekend. All right. We're going to have to take another quick break. And if you have a call for us, feel free to give us a shout here at 749-B105. Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. And we have, again, Bob from Barge Nursery co-hosting for Ernie today. And we'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. And we need to go to Jennifer. She's been so patiently waiting for us. Good morning, Jennifer. How are you? Jennifer, you there? Jennifer wants... No, give us a call back. Somehow we got disconnected there, or you're not hearing us. But we've been covering a lot of ground this morning. And
A lot of ground.
A lot of
it's going to be a beautiful day. I mean, it's a little cloudy looking out, but you can see the sun's trying to peek through here and there. And I think it's going to get cloudier as the day goes on. But this is going to be a great day to get out and work. I think it's still like almost 60 degrees right now. I didn't look at the temperature this morning. It was 58 when we came in.
I was very comfortable this morning. I'm in shorts. Now I'm...
See, I don't like being even a little bit cold. I like the hot. So let's bring on the 75 and sunny and 80 and sunny. I'm good with it. I'm fine with it. Bring it on.
You like it when it gets up to around 80 or 90? Yeah,
I was watching my son play baseball the other day. High school baseball starts. You know, this time of year, sometimes it gets cold. And I know the people were looking at me like I was strange because I had my Carhartt on and my hoodie on. But I don't like being cold. You know, it needs to be.
That's that guy that's got that Easter tree right there.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that are wrong about me, and that's another one. So,
hey, and by the way, where's your smart water this morning?
You know what? I forgot my smart water. I got my energy water.
If people can't
tell, that's why I'm jumping around from place to place to place because I got my energy water.
I almost stopped on the way in to pick up some smart water so I could hang with you. I was wondering if you're going to bring in another bottle.
Next time I'm on, I will bring you a bottle. I wanted to stop and bring in some donuts today. I was feeling it was a donut day.
I'm glad that you did not.
Oh, you're not a donut guy?
Only the cheese crowns from Grater's.
Oh, okay. See, any of the donuts are good. Krispy Kreme, good hot Krispy Kreme. I'm good with it. Yeah, I can stop and eat a couple of those.
I'll take a box of those.
Yeah.
I was telling Tina yesterday, real quick, I don't want to get off on this subject. She's like, what do you want for dinner? I said, you know what? Let me give you a couple of dollars. Go out to White Castle's and pick up a few cheeseburgers.
Yeah, not wrong.
She goes, are you serious? Right? I was like, yeah, I'm really serious.
They taste good every once in a while.
When someone tells you they don't like White Castle's, they're lying.
Yeah, I know. Now, I did one bad thing. I got to confess. I did one other thing. My daughter turned 18 last week, and we got a cookie cake. One of those big cookie cake places.
Yeah.
My wife was laughing at me because we went up to pick it up, and I asked if they had an extra one for me. And I ordered a whole cookie pie, fully covered with icing, all for myself. I shared it with everybody. But she's like, what's wrong with you? I'm like, these things are so good, I can't help it.
No wonder you do well for Ernie, because he thinks the same way.
Yeah, you got to have that cookie cake with all the icing. It's funny, we had the party, and everybody had a choice between the one with all icing and no icing. Mine, the one I bought, was gone. Everybody ate the one with the icing. So I didn't get to eat as much as I wanted.
So you felt left out?
I did. So I had to cut through all the icing of the other cookie cake.
Cut through the chase.
Absolutely.
Cut through the icing. All right, we have Daryl with us. Good morning, Daryl. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Going okay. So you're on a hunt for a tree. What type of tree?
Well, it can't be a tree.
Oh, okay.
It's got to be something I can plant on a trellis that's in a very small, narrow place between a driveway and an apartment building. Somebody put some graffiti on this apartment building like 15 years ago, and it will not come off. I need to hide it.
Oh, okay. Quick question.
But
Is it the exposure in this particular area? Is it sun, shade?
90% parts? Shade.
Boy, I got an answer for you. How big's the area that you want to cover? I just want to get a size.
Needs to be about 6 to 8 feet tall eventually. It needs to grow like that. I can build a trellis there, not an issue. I just need something that will grow like that.
What about width?
2 foot, 4 foot.
Oh, that's okay. Now you're really narrowing it down. I'm thinking of three things right off the bat in that situation, but they're going to outgrow it, outpace it, and you'll call me up and curse me out and all that other good stuff.
Is it something I can turn back, keep turning back?
Well, two things I had in mind, you know, especially if not just you, but if anyone is thinking about something vining that grows in that type of a situation, Boston ivy, and even Virginia creeper. That's another quick one. But you certainly don't want those. You'll be upset. Actually, something that might be nice that you can keep trimmed. You're not going to really get a lot of bloom out of it because you might need a little bit more sun. Is I love the climbing hydrangea.
That's what I was going to suggest because it's still somewhat trimmable, but there's going to be no bloom. It's just going to be green.
That's not an issue.
But very attractive.
I need to hide this graffiti. This is the problem.
Yeah.
You know, it's on this apartment building. I planted hosta, and this is, like I said, the driveway is right next to it. I've got about a 2-foot space that is green between the driveway and this building. And I planted hostas down along that because I know they like the shade, and they're doing fine there.
You know, you might try a climbing hydrangea and keep it contained. I will tell you this. Once it's established and it is taking a hold, you know, a hold with its root structure, you know, you'll get some nice growth on it, you know, from this point forth. But use a root stimulator like Biotone to encourage root development or Fertilum's root stimulator.
Okay.
I highly encourage people to use one of those two products, especially with the climbing hydrangea. A beautiful specimen. And also, you know, it's deciduous, so it will lose its foliage in the winter months. But the vining part of it, the bark part of it, is kind of exfoliates. So it's very interesting and creates that winter interest, too.
Okay.
So a very nice plant to have in the landscape if you don't have it. It's one that sometimes I forget about.
Right.
And worth having.
It usually will grow in that kind of environment. The other thing you just got to make sure, being that it's such a small area, is during the summer, make sure you're checking it for water. Because sometimes that concrete blacktop, whatever you've got around it, since you got a small space, it gets hot, warms it up pretty quick. I wouldn't want to see it, you know, scorch it. So
it gets some good water there. It's the water's not the issue. It's just there is the people live next door, and they have a complete tree line that is, you know, 60 foot tall.
Yeah.
And it really blocks that, and the apartment building blocks it from the other side.
I'd say that's your best bet.
What about ornamental grass? Would it grow there?
It would struggle. You know, if you're not...
It would struggle.
Yeah, ornamental grass, just to make it known, it needs at least 6 hours of sun. Some will tolerate a little less, but what typically happens is it gets really lazy. You don't get the growth that it's capable of giving you. And, for example, zebra grass, I really like a lot. And I had it in an area in my landscape. I knew it was questionable, and it wasn't quite enough sun, and it got lazy. I had to keep it tied up, and eventually I lifted it. Yeah.
Okay. So climbing hydrangea, huh?
Mm-hmm. And you're going to find, I tell you what, I don't even think they know what that even is in a chain store. I don't mean that to sound bad, but as you go to a good reputable garden center, and if they don't have it on hand, we can easily get our hands on it. It's just a plant that's not really talked about a lot, but deserves a lot of merit.
Okay.
All right. Take care, Daryl. Let us know how it goes.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those are tough areas. We get that a lot from different people. I got this small area between the sidewalk and the house, and what do I get to grow? And it's always a tough area. So
that in particular, all of a sudden, I'm thinking one thing, and it narrows down and funnels down into this.
2 foot is really skinny.
Yeah.
So, and that's not an easy thing. If Daryl's still listening, I'd make that trellis really beefy so it kind of camouflages. The trellis itself camouflages some of the...
something like a wooden lattice or something.
Yeah, something thick. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, we've got to take another quick break, and Bob Bard's with me this morning. He's filling in for Ernie, and I'm Tony and Ernie, in and around the house, your local home and gardening guys, and if you're just getting up, welcome, and if you have any questions, give us a call, 749-B105. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys, and boy, we've not covered a lot of ground this morning, I can't tell you. We've talked about different trees, things for small confined spaces. We've talked a little bit about
early spring color.
Early spring color. Talked a lot about the three-step program, which we want to encourage everybody to get out to your local garden centers and nurseries and pick up the Fertiloom three-step lawn program. Today's going to be a great day to get that down because we have a little bit of rain in the forecast, and that's going to really help that product set up. The prodiamine is going to give you that barrier that you need to keep out pesky weeds, anything germinating in your lawn, and especially crabgrass.
And I got two tips for that real quick. On your spreader, most people have a drop spreader or a broadcast spreader.
I hope they don't have the drop spreader.
I know.
That's old school.
The broadcast spreader is going to fan, basically have the little whirly bird on the bottom that fans things out as it drops down through. You want to try to keep your pass about 6 feet apart. So they actually did a study on this. The first 2 feet from the center of the spreader, 1 foot out on each side, the right or left, covers about 100% coverage. And as it spreads out from there, it actually drops 25% the next 2 feet as it goes out, and then so on. So if you go about every 6 feet, you'll have really good coverage.
And then go back the other direction or diagonally.
Exactly. If you have extra go over perpendicular to the way you went before.
And you know what else is important, too, is that once you get to the end of the run, shut the hopper. Close it. Don't turn on a dime.
Well, if you do, you're going to have an extra spot of green or burn.
Yeah, one of the two.
Mm-hmm.
And usually it's burn.
And then on your spreader, on the prodiamine, I've always found for most spreaders, you're going to open about a third, the opening a third. So if you have a dial of 1 through 16, you set it on a 5 or a 6. If it's A, B, C, or D, I've seen it that way too. But your opening for the fertilizer to fall down through should be opened about a third typically. But it'll tell you on the label, if you read your label, what you should set that on.
And more is not better.
Not better.
And guys, you think that all the time. You're wasting product and you're wasting money.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you do more harm than good with more.
Absolutely. So, you know, but this is it's a great time to get out. I mean, if you haven't put down your prodiamine in your beds, or you haven't done your dimensions, I should say, in your beds. I misspoke. Sorry about that.
Well, you can use prodiamine in a bed if you
can,
want.
But typically we like that dimensions. We just love, I mean, both. But you and I both love the product because it works. But, you know, get that down on your mulch beds to prevent any extra weeds from germinating.
And speaking of, I don't mean to interrupt you.
Sure.
Do you like to put it underneath and on top or just on top? I'm overkill.
I do both because I treat before I mulch. So I've already treated my bed, so it's down on the old mulch.
Got it.
If you can do it twice, put it down over top the mulch is fine. Everybody has their opinion. You know what? If somebody does it, you're much better off.
Yeah. We're going to go, we have Jason on the line here in Mount Orb. Good morning, Jason. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Going well. So, transplanting evergreens. A couple of things I want to know. What it is and how long has it been there?
Don't know exactly what kind of evergreen it is.
Mm-hmm.
There is other pines on the farm, and it's, you know, in a different location.
Mm-hmm.
It's about 4 foot tall now.
Okay.
So what kind it is, I couldn't tell you for sure, but, I mean, it's a beautiful little tree.
Well,
I transplanted up to the yard.
In that particular situation, I'm more in favor of transplanting evergreens late summer, early fall.
Late summer, early fall. Okay.
Right. Now, in your situation, being it's not as big, and actually, this is the time to dig, too. So you could transplant that, but you want to get as much as that root ball or structure that you possibly can.
Okay.
And have the place where it's going to be located ready and prepped to go.
Okay.
And I would amend the soil with some peat moss, compost, and use a root stimulator.
Okay.
And go ahead and make the move. Something that's big or age or older in the landscape, it gets really tricky and dicey, and you don't always get all the root structure.
Right.
I'm really apprehensive about moving evergreens because too much can go wrong. Not that you can't be successful, but I think in your situation, you're going to be fine. Bob, chime in. What are your thoughts?
I think you'll be fine. Just what Tony said, just get as much of that root ball as possible. And that'll give you the best success. And then remember to treat that like a brand new plant. You know, you've transplanted, you moved it, so you're going to want to water it, you know, on a regular basis. If we're not getting rain, maybe once a week, put the hose against the trunk and just really soak that root ball. Just treat it like a brand new plant. And, you know, 4 footer should be pretty easy to move. If it's been in since, you know, it was a seedling, it's going to be a little bit of work, you know, but remember when you start to dig it, start out wide. You can always shrink the root ball, but you can't put roots back on if you cut it too short. So go ahead, start wide and work your way back towards the trunk.
So the bigger, the better.
You got it.
All right. Sounds great.
All right. Good luck.
I mean, it's just a beautiful little tree. I hate to see it sit out, and it's along the edge of a field where it's going to get planted with, you know, soybeans or corn. Mm. And it's basically going to get sprayed or run over.
Right.
Yeah, no, I think you'll be successful with it. And stop by a local nursery and see if you can pick up some burlap. You know, okay. You want something that will biodegrade, too, so not all burlap is made the same.
Right.
So that will help keep that root ball intact, and just take it from there.
All right, great, thanks. Thanks.
You're welcome. Have a good weekend, Jason. Thanks.
There's going to be a lot of people trying to transplant.
Yeah.
And it's okay. And yeah. I think you'll be fine right now.
Now, transplanting is kind of a tricky thing. We'll talk more about that, actually. We've got to take another quick break. Give us a call here at 749-B105. Tony with Ernie, your local home and gardening guys here at In and Around the House. We'll be right back. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. And just a little bit of information here. If you're looking for something to do today and you're all caught up with things around the landscape or anything you have to do inside, take the little ones down to the Crone Conservatory, the butterfly show, the Monarch Butterfly Show kicks off today. Always a great time
it's
down
neat.
There, too.
It's neat to really see. If you haven't is. Seen it, you need to see it.
You need to see it. And with that said, also keep this in mind. The perennial plant of the year is the Asclepias tuberosa, which is the plant that the monarch butterfly totally relies on for its future generations as it migrates north. And so important to keep the monarch, you know, and its populations growing. And there for a while was starting to go in the wrong direction, so to speak. You know, it was getting less and less and less. And a lot of that has to do with what we've done, what man has done over time with development and mm-hmm. Spraying and all that other good stuff.
Don't you find people are asking more about stuff like that? You know, for the landscaping, you know, different for the bees and the butterflies and things like that. I'm getting a lot more questions.
A lot of it, and rightfully so. And we talk about a lot of products here. Bob and I, we've talked about this before, even, you know, just when we get together and off the air. You know, we talk about products that we use in the landscape, and we always caution you to go by the label, use things in a diligent fashion and manner. We're stewards of the earth, so we got to be very responsible about when we spray, what we're spraying, because we do not want to harm the beneficials. And
Absolutely.
When we say that,
and
we're talking about the good insects.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what we're talking about. So, you know, and it's a great day to get out and do it. Get out and work in the yard and plant some of those. Look at some of the early planting things that we talked about with color and the pansies and the violas and a lot of the perennials. I mean, annuals, you're going to want, everybody's going to get itchy, and they're going to start talking about annuals.
Well, we have some annuals that are looking really, really stellar.
Yes.
But we're not encouraging people to put those out into the landscape bed yet. Now, some people can get a little early start with containers that mm-hmm. they're able to just kind of, you play the old shell game. You know, you move it into the garage for that evening, and then it needs to go back out. Don't buy things and say, I'm just going to put them in the garage until it's time to plant.
Right.
And that doesn't work.
There are a few annuals that'll handle 40 degrees, but we're not even close to being done with some 30s yet. There's going to be some 30-degree days. Now, you start putting petunias out in 30-degree days, they might live 1 or 2 days, but then they're going to look bad.
No,
so,
it's not going to fare well for
not
you.
Not at all.
So
but they're coming, and now's a good time to start looking and seeing what you want.
Get some ideas. Mm-hmm. And, you know, something that you can plant that you're going to start finding in your local garden centers and nurseries, if you haven't already seen them, are some of your cold crops. You know, I'm talking about things like lettuce, kale, cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower, you know, spinach. All of those things, get them in the ground and get them started. Onion sets. So these are things that you can do now.
Right.
And
the ground temperatures are just about right for all that right now, aren't they?
Perfect.
Yeah.
It's perfect. You know, and you just said something about petunias. I need to ask you about one petunia in particular.
Sure.
And it's called Night Sky.
And that's the one with the purple with the white spots,
yes.
Correct?
It looks like the universe. It looks like somebody just threw glitter on them.
We talked about it a year ago, I think, when you and I were on, when I was on it sometime in the spring. And if people haven't seen this one, it is a unique and beautiful petunia plant. It is a dark, it is a true purple. When you say purple, mm-hmm. it is a true purple with white specks. Every flower is completely different. That's what's unique because you just don't know where the specks
are
going to show up.
No two flowers will look alike.
Ever. And it is a beautiful, beautiful plant. And if you're looking for something unique, it is one you can use. Loves the sun, will not do real well in shade, won't grow in shade, but if it's in sun, it will do wonderful. It's great in containers and pots.
Oh, it's awesome. And it also attracts hummingbirds. Mm-hmm. So look for this one in your local garden centers and nurseries. It's one that was introduced last year.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't as readily available last year because it was a new introduction. However, you should see more of it this upcoming season.
Yeah, and there's a lot of neat annuals out there. You know, there's so much color. We're always talking about color and spring color. If you're unable to get the pansies in, you know, start thinking about your annuals, because even I still love the old-fashioned begonias. I just love begonias. They're easy. They look amazing. So, you know, we're not far from
the wax, the old wax begonias.
Yeah, just the old-fashioned begonias.
Do you remember the names of those?
I do not. I don't remember.
They were named after drinks.
Is that
gin,
what
vodka?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah,
and then the bigger one, the Whopper.
Whopper's great.
So.
And really, with the demise of the Impatient, the Wallerina variety, unfortunately, because of downy mildew, you know, all of a sudden, you know, the begonia's taken center stage. Mm-hmm. And rightfully so, because I think we had forgotten about the begonia a few years ago.
We have, and it's just such an easy, hardy, tough, deer-resistant plant. You know, I put them in a lot of golf courses. People come in and get them, and some of the golf courses around us will get flowers for their tee boxes and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's one we've used that has never, it's never had any trouble. It's been pretty easy.
Oh, everyone loves the dragon wing begonia, too. Mm-hmm. That is one that will take sun, shade, partial sun, part shade, you name it.
Yeah.
It will give you nothing but dynamite performance.
And there's just, that's what I love about our industry. There's so much out there with annuals, perennials. If you're looking for something specific, odds are we've got something for you. Even when we're talking about the Japanese maples, you know, there's certain varieties that fit certain areas. You know, there's something out there, and this industry's wonderful.
Something for everybody
right.
When it comes to plants, that's for sure. You know, I have to ask you this, too. Do you have any type of a recipe, soil-wise, for containers, or what type of suggestions do you guys make at Bard's for containers, like window boxes or anything that's on a patio?
We love it's the old Fafford is what it was a 3B mix from Fafford. And mm-hmm. Fertilome makes a good one. Mm-hmm. I know they have one. There's a lot of good planting soils out there, but the Fafford is the one we grow all of our flowers in, and we love it. It's light, it's soilless. It really is a good mixture, great for plants, very balanced. It's just a good seed, but there's a lot out there.
And yeah, because I want to cover this just a little bit before we conclude the show, because I think a lot of people who have issues with their window boxes and containers has a lot to do with not having the right soil mixture in those containers. Give us a call at 749-B105. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard filling in for Ernie, and we'll be right back in a moment. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. And right there before we went into the break, we're just talking about some of our containers and what makes those containers and those window boxes successful. And I believe, and I will argue this tooth and nail, that it all has to do with the soil mixture.
Yeah, this is one of those where sometimes people want to, you know, everybody's on a budget, and I understand that. But this is one of those times where maybe spending a little bit more money and getting a better quality potting soil is good. You know, sometimes you'll get the 99-cent potting soil bag. It's a real rich, black, peat only. Your plants never do well. They rot. They look
stay
bad.
Stay wet. It
you
never
saved
dries
a few
out.
Bucks, yeah. But you really didn't because your flowers died.
Yeah,
so this is where one of those, you know, you want to make sure that you get a good quality potting soil.
Well, it's an investment. When you spend a little bit of money on your plants, I mean, it's like buying a $100 tree and putting it into a $5 hole.
Yeah. Yeah.
You'll get $5 worth of performance
for
the most part. But I think I like to use Fertilome's Ultimate Potting Mix.
Right.
And I like to mix it 50-50 with Garden Magic Topsoil.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that Garden Magic Topsoil is just what you were talking about. It's that dark kind of sedge peat with a little bit of sand in it. And I do not want you to use that by itself and straight up.
Not straight.
But when you cut it, it's a good topsoil for the price. But when you cut it with that sphagnum peat moss that's in the Fertilome Ultimate Potting Mix,
mm-hmm.
it's a nice texture. Use that. Start with that. Also, what's really, really important, too, is to make sure you have stone in the bottom of your containers or broken clay pots is what I like to use. And you have to provide for ample drainage.
Yes.
That's necessary. So once you get everything in place, you know, the stone that you need or the broken clay pots for drainage, that soil mixture, pot up your planters or your window boxes, and then once everything's in place, come back with Osmocote and fertilize, and just take your fingertips and scratch it into the top layer of the soil just lightly. Don't plant it with the plant because it could potentially burn the root
system. Put
it on top. So every time it rains or you water, it slowly breaks down. It's going to give you a good solid 3 months of fertilization. And then you can start there, and then you know from that point after about six, or after you get through about 8 to 12 weeks, you can start picking up your fertilization process.
Right.
And I want this to lead into, I'm not big on the soils that already have the fertilizer in it.
I'm not big on it either. I like to control it myself. It kind of goes back to the mulch that we talked about, you know, not putting a pre-emergent in.
Right.
But, you know, if you're finding a good tip for people to know whether they've got a good quality potting soil, if their plants, when they go to pull them out in the towards winter, and they're rooted really deeply into the pot, almost when they pull it out, they pull all the soil
out.
So
right.
You got good soil. You got a good potting mix. I mean, I'll rip mine out, and I have some pots that are 2 feet tall, and the roots are almost to the bottom, you know, and I have to replace most of that soil every year because it does so well. So if you're planting your flowers and all of a sudden at the end of the season you pull them out and there's no dirt coming with it, your soil's probably too wet or too rich, and you need to
become
a little bit lighter and fluffier so the roots really can get down into it.
And, you know, you take that whole process, and we're going to repeat it here real quick. Start with a good soil.
Yes.
That's so important. Don't buy cheap stuff because you're spending a lot of money and you're investing a lot of your time and effort into these beautiful plants. You want them to perform well. You know, provide for good drainage, good soil, get the right plant in the right place based on your exposure. Use the Osmocote fertilizer. And when you take care of it throughout the course of the season, water underneath the foliage, always deadhead, because when you deadhead, you're picking off the spent blooms. You're encouraging new like bud development. That's going to give you all that color throughout the season. So
great,
you should have beautiful, beautiful boxes.
Yeah, and the time's not far off. I mean, we're about a month and a half away from everybody putting just about everything out. You know, you can get some of the early stuff here soon, but even for your pansies, a good soil is going to get them to root. They're going to be more vibrant. They're going to be more colorful. The foliage is going to be healthier. You're going to water less. Everything is good when you get the right soil. You know, it's like the planting. It's like the landscaping. Everything we talk about is the good foundation. Without a good foundation, you know, you're going to struggle and have problems. And it's just easier to spend. It's not that much more. It might add $5 to your bill, but it's worth it. It's going to add a lot of value down the road.
You get what you pay for, and don't start off on the wrong foot. That's not good. You want beautiful window boxes and beautiful containers. And when you have guests over, if they're out there at the front door, it gives you that curb appeal. It's welcoming to your guests with beautiful plants and containers around the back. If you like to entertain and have family members over and relax when you get home from work, it's a wonderful feeling when our landscapes and our outdoor living environments are so, like, relaxing.
Exactly.
Tranquil. It makes you feel good when you get home from work.
And we're almost done. We're almost out of time. But, you know, get out and do it. It's going to be a great day. It's going to be, the sun is going to be in and out, and it's going to get cloudier as the day goes on. But, you know, we touched on a lot of topics today.
Covered a lot of ground. And the most important thing that you can do is support your local garden centers and nurseries. Get out there, see what's new, what's coming in, and pick up that Fertiloom 3-step program. Get it down. Mow your lawn first. Get it down. Get things started off. Watch a little bit of hoop after a while.
That'll work.
Go X.
Let's go X, and, you know, let's go Cats. We want all the local teams to do well.
There you go. We'll see you next week.